All right, we'll call to order the Stevensville Town Council meeting for Thursday, June 4th, 2020. Ms. Hoffman, would you please call the roll?
Mayor Dewey.
Here.
Councilmember Devlin.
Here.
Councilmember Holcomb.
Here.
Councilmember Vick.
Here.
And Councilmember Michelson.
Here.
Okay, thank you. If you'd please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, before we call for public comment, just a couple of items of housekeeping. If you're in need of the restroom, it's through these double doors. Take a right. It's through the next set of double doors in the attached building of the library. That's where the restrooms are located. We have a slew of business to get through tonight, and some of the folks who have business on the agenda aren't able to come into the room, given the situation what it is. So after public comment, if any of you are willing to leave the room for a moment so that the school representatives can come in, we'd sure appreciate that. We'd appreciate your consideration there. We are doing our best to adhere to social distancing. We realize everyone has an opinion as to the effectiveness of social distancing, but the governor's orders are what they are, and this is an uncomfortable situation, not just for you, but for everyone. It's the entire administration who has to make these accommodations. We realize the screen is dim, and a number of other factors, but this beats where it would be otherwise, which would be in town hall, half the square footage. So we're trying to be as accommodating as possible, and do know that we continue to stream meetings on Facebook, Zoom, and YouTube so that folks can participate remotely if they so choose to. So with that, we'll open the floor for public comment, an opportunity to comment from citizens on items that are not on the agenda. If you want to make comment, please step forward to the podium, state your name and address for the record.
My name is Patrick Short, I live at 507 Central Avenue.
Patrick, if that microphone's not on, would you mind turning it on? Thank you. Patrick, before you start, I just bring to everyone's attention, there are guidelines for public comment on the back of the agenda, so before you make a public comment, please consider those as well.
Mr. Short. If I have a chance to read that, stop me if you need to.
That's okay. Go for it.
I have prepared a lengthy public comment, but after seeing the agenda, I'll keep it short. The recall efforts during the pandemic are nothing short of reckless. County officials informed me that the group knew that the paperwork was due July 1st, yet they pushed forward with complete disregard for us all. These actions could have harmed us all. The recall is based on misinformation. The IT services were in the budget. We as a council passed that budget. It took us 5 months to review that budget. If citizens are concerned with the amount that was budgeted for services, they should direct their concerns to the council members that passed the budget, myself included. I have no problem being accountable for the decisions that I make. The felonious recall is going to cost the town approximately $2,000 of taxpayer money. The council has a responsibility to approve this expenditure. If you approve the expenditure, you are approving of the grievous methods used to obtain those signatures and the lies that were used to coerce our fellow citizens into signing. By doing so, by approving that expenditure, I see one fit to sit in this council. Ms. Devlin, thank you for your service. The bullying and the harassment that you have tolerated is out of control. You are a strong and courageous woman. You have my utmost respect. Stevensville Town Hall staff, as a citizen in this community, I want to express a heartfelt thank you for sticking with this job through the bullying and through the harassment. It's not easy. I received it myself. It's a hostile environment. Nobody should have to work in it. You also have my respect and admiration. Mayor Dewey, we have not always seen eye to eye on particular issues, but you have always acted in a respectful manner and fulfilled your role with integrity. You are doing a great job, and I appreciate it. I'm going to excuse myself so other people can come in.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Mayor and Council, Raymond Smith, 326 Valley View. To Council Members Dempsey Vick, Amy Devlin, and Mayor Dewey, thank you, Mr. Vick, for pulling the illegal, unethical, inept resolution or agenda item. But the damage has been done. You all created an untenable situation and unforgivable situation for Mr. Michelson. You have slandered, made inflammatory, defaming remarks about the character of a sitting council member with the language used in that resolution or agenda. You, Mr. Vick, you, Ms. Devlin, accused an elected official of forgery, of intimidation of town employees. Councilmember Michelson had a documented history of conduct that could be considered to reflect poorly on the town council and town of Stevensville, that there was inappropriate contact with staff and department heads of the town, and representing the town without express authority or permission to do so, and making personal comments about others, their opinions, and their actions. You elected or voted as a council to have Mr. Michelson as the council president. It is his job to get data. Mr. Michelson's name and character has been impugned, slandered, defamed, and damaged by you guys not doing your due diligence as elected officials, by not even knowing how to write the resolution or agenda item to follow the basic guidelines of Robert's Rules of Order, town policy, and basic common decency. The mayor failed to do his diligence and broke several rules of his own office, the new policy that everyone is touting over and over. I know he has on several prior times rejected an agenda item for lack of documentation when presented, causing that agenda item or to be delayed until said documentation was attached. What amazed me the most was the cavalier attitude of all of you, that you could just pull the resolution and act as there was no harm, no foul. It's outrageous. I heard no apology from any one of you. What I heard is we can slander, defame his character with no consequences. Ms. Devlin and Mayor Dewey, there is a bias that you have shown and a disdain and attitude towards Mr. Michelson. This, again, is not following your anti-bullying council rules. My question is why? Because he is doing his job as an elected official of the town of Stevensville, reading, researching, learning, and doing what Mr. Michelson was elected to do by the citizens of Ward 2 of the town of Stevensville, by uncovering the unethical, unlawful acts of the mayor, forcing this and previous councils to continually backdate and fix the actions of Mayor Dewey. How can the council address the actual issues of the community when we have these unneeded issues? Do you know your role and responsibility as council members? Ms. Devlin, you spoke about maybe people should have read the budget and such before they signed it for the IT and such. May I suggest you do the same with regards to the book that we were given when we were elected as council members? How can Councilmember Michelson work with a mayor who refuses to even deal with him in a respectful manner? He does not respond to Mr. Michelson's emails, requests for documents, information to do his job as council president. Mayor Dewey, from his beginning, has had a major personal vendetta and problem with Mr. Michelson from his swearing in as mayor. How many times have we had a reset with the mayor saying he is willing to work with council? Yet here we are again. The mayor has continually shown in his actions that it is not possible. He runs to the paper or they come when he calls with a salacious story about Mr. Michelson and others he wishes to smear, making statements that a mayor should understand no comment is better than the comment that he makes. They created another poor image in Stephenville. The statements in the paper, both council members Vic and Devlin, declined to discuss the issue, stating that the town attorney Scott Hoens had advised them not to discuss the items in the resolution with the press until the council meeting. Well, then that agenda item was pulled. So again, I get to, why would the town attorney advise only two of the four sitting council members? That in itself sets a bias for those council members, Mr. Michelson included, by the town attorney. He should not be advising you because you should be seeking your outside legal representation on matters such as this. Just like the recall, it is Mayor Dewey's responsibility to get his legal advice outside. Mr. Owens is the town attorney. You say, Mayor Dewey, that his new staff members are being harassed and bullied by Mr. Michael. He said it was like deja vu. I guess that references the $500,000 lawsuit that by Mayor Dewey not doing his due diligence as the mayor and stopping it before it reached that point, we are now in litigation as a community. So this, he said, one employee was threatened in a way that echoes the claims made in the former town clerk Audrey Tribazine's lawsuit against the town. He makes repeated calls demanding things from staff, said Dewey. He also accused Michelson of lying to Councilmember Vick and interfering in town business by calling a company to tell them that the contract they had with the town was not valid. Again, if Mayor Dewey, as he has stated in the paper, feels that he has the authority, as he stated in the paper, that he, why are we here for a third time for this agenda item? So they claim that Mr. Michelson failed to follow established process for requesting public records. Well, it's amazing. How did emails get disseminated to a certain councilman? Was that policy followed? Where is the paperwork that shows that the request for information and or emails went to the clerk, from the clerk to the town attorney, from the town attorney to the affected individual to see if they could or would be released, and then it rolls back to the release? So where was that policy followed? How did these emails again get disseminated? You claimed that Mr. Michelson failed to follow established process for requesting public records by disseminating a record containing information that may have put the town's information technology system at risk, end of quote. Again, Mayor Dewey, where is the documentation for these statements against a sitting council member? Does he not have rights to face his accuser to prevent his evidence in defense if needed? How about the recommendations that were made by the investigation in regards to the $500,000 lawsuit? It made clear that you played a major role in the investigation with the former clerk. You didn't follow proper procedures, protocols, as outlined in town personnel policy. And that Mr. Michelson was cleared of any malicious activities. Mayor Dewey again made statements to the paper that again were unfounded, creating the pending litigation by said former clerk. I have a problem as an ex-council member and taxpayer with the town attorney only advising two of the four council members not to speak with the press. Why wasn't Councilmember Holcomb advised by the town attorney? Did Mayor Dewey inform him not to speak to her? Again, this creates a vision of bias and impropriety. Yet here, Mayor Dewey, we are again leading the charge against Councilmember Michelson. If the two Councilmember We're told by the attorney to have no comment. What about you? Why is the town attorney even speaking with the council members about this? Every time I asked our previous town attorney, Brian West, such questions, or when I had same type of issue that Mayor Dewey created while I was on council, we were told, and I quote, "You must seek outside counsel." Then the one time that he did provide me with information, the next day he verbally told Council President Michelson and the mayor that he had breached his contract with the town and they wished he would resign. So now I question why our town attorney would provide counsel to them. Does he not have the same contract as Mr. West? He is the town attorney, not a personal attorney for only two of the four council members, or even the mayor's personal attorney. You represent the interests of the town of Stevensville. I see his actions as a breach of his role and responsibilities as the town attorney. This could be seen by others as a bias against Mr. Michelson on future and non-related issues that may come before the town. Mayor Dewey, what about the town policy of information concerning employee grievance is confidential information is to be discussed only with the individuals involved in the investigation or need to know basis. Decisions on grievances will not set precedent and are not at the discretion of the town of Stevensville. Again, you were quoted in the paper. Mayor Dewey said that his staff members were being harassed. So, again, I question why we are here. He covered himself by saying that Mr. Vick and Ms. Devlin submitted the agenda item, so he had to, as mayor, move forward with it. He did not. Again, he has rejected agenda items. The response in the paper by Mr. Michelson said, "I don't quite understand why Council Member Vick would sign an agenda item with me and then turn around and take his name off it and file all this stuff against me. I just don't get it." Who was not spoken to with by the town attorney as we, Mr. Vick and Ms. Devlin? Strange. The previous council resigned trying to send a signal to the community about all of the mayor's action that have cost our community wasted taxpayer funds and wasted time. Your spending of tax dollars is incredible. We have the snow removal costs. We have the new desks. That's $6,000. Still don't know how much the bonding trip that you took with the new staff cost. You invited one council member, but not the rest. Then we have the $79,000 contract that you signed without the council approval, without the three bids or the required placement into the paper. That could have created another legal issue for our community. Only when this claim was discovered by Council Member Holcomb and then researched by Council Member Michelson, with you doing your best not to answer his request for information.
That's really distracting.
Causing him to seek it through other means. Again, how many times has this and previous council had to backtrack your actions? Let's address the breach that Mr. Michelson is supposedly performed by releasing a document with the town's IP address. He didn't release those documents. You and the town treasurer did. You guys did not black out that information. Yet it is in the paper as if Mr. Michelson did this. I would be furious, offended, downright mad at all of your actions. How is he to now work with all of you? How can he now just move on? There is clearly a bias against Mr. Michelson by the mayor, certain council members, and certain staff, all because they are caught in the middle by Mayor Dewey's actions, bias statements, and if I was here, I would seek outside counsel, Mr. Michelson. Council members Vick and Devlin and the mayor, no apology is enough for the damage you have caused. It was even put up on our town's Facebook page, okay? And it should have been removed. I get to the other point of the letter that I saw in the paper. As a citizen of Stevensville, I am appalled by this letter. It seems that this office has been closed for the public for almost 3 months now. So why have we waited this long to speak out? Seems a bit odd that you would write this letter of support for the mayor while he is being recalled. Remember, you all work for the town of Stevensville, not Mayor Dewey. Mayors come and go. You need to remain unbiased, neutral, and understand it is the people of Stevensville you serve and who pay your salaries, not the mayor. I have a few questions regarding the letter that as a taxpayer and a citizen, I feel should be answered. Was the mayor informed and participating in writing of the letter? Did he give all of you the green light to write this on town time? Did he give you all permission to place it in the paper? Was the town attorney involved with any of this whole process? You say certain community members without knowledge of those you speak of, I as a citizen feel you're speaking about myself and the whole community being painted with a broad stroke. Yet I have always treated you all with respect and dignity and have appreciated what you do for our town. The town policy that you guys as employees and members said there was nothing you could do. There is a town policy for this, that conduct that threatens, intimidates, or coerces another employee, a citizen, vendor, business, will not be tolerated. Town of Stevensville resources may not be used to threaten, stop, or harass anyone at or outside the workplace, in person or via electronic communication, such as email, social media, which again, Mr. Michelson's was put on social media with no recourse for him. So, Town of Stevensville treats threats coming from an abusive personal relationship as it does any form of violence. Indirect or direct threats of violence, incidents or of actual violence, and suspicious individuals' activities should be reported as soon as possible to a supervisor or mayor. When reporting a threat or incident of violence, the employee should be specific, have detailed as possible. Employees should not place themselves in peril, nor should they attempt to intercede during an incident. The town of Stevensville will promptly and thoroughly investigate all reports of threats of violence, incidents of actual violence, suspicious individuals or activities. The identity of that individual making a report will be protected as much as possible. The town of Stevensville will not retaliate against employee making good faith reports of violence, threats, or suspicious individuals or activities. To maintain safety and integrity of the investigation, the town of Stevensville may suspend employees suspected of workplace violence or threats, either with or without pay, pending an investigation. The personnel manual also states you have a grievance. In the event of a dispute cannot be resolved informally, the employee should file a grievance in writing to the mayor, again, documentation, within 10 days of the occurrence of the disputed issue. If the grievance is against the mayor, the employee will file with the town attorney. The written grievance must outline the disputed issue, relevant facts, and requested remedy. Upon receipt of the grievance, the mayor and or his designee will investigate the dispute and respond within 20 days of receipt of the grievance. There is an appeal process also. Won't go into that. The town attorney may accept all or part of the mayor's recommendation or reject the recommendation and formulate another resolution to the disputed issue within 20 working days of the receipt of that written grievance. the town attorney may accept the mayor's decision or propose an alternate response for the mayor's consideration. The mayor may then make a final decision as to the resolution of the grievance. Again, here's the really key part that I don't see that was afforded to Mr. Michelson. Information concerning grievances, employee grievances, is confidential and is to be discussed only with individuals involved in the investigation or on a need-to-know basis. Decisions on grievances will not set precedent, and at the discretion of the town of Stevensville, police officers have the right to appeal through the police commission. So there, they have a process. Again, the mayor did not do his job and follow the policies set forth, nor the procedures set forth to follow with dealing with this issue. I appreciate what you do for our town, but your job is to answer questions from the public and the council members. They are doing work for the town. Citizens have concerns about issues facing our community. No matter what you personally think of that request, because again, we were making assumptions that somebody's request for information is invalid or ridiculous. No matter what you personally think of that request, you work for the citizens of Stevensville, not Mayor Dewey. There will be other administrations. You will work again for the town. You work for the town, not the mayor. In any other corporate environment, this letter would have had you terminated. Again, we have policies. You all have a personnel manual. You all have a grievance policy that allows you to address these issues. You speak up. Yet again, the mayor is not following procedures or policies of the town. This failure by the mayor is why we are being sued by the previous clerk for $500,000. He did not follow policy, and this is a result of his failure. Now we get to the other policy about bringing bad attention to the town. Demeanor. All employees are expected to conduct themselves in a manner that will positively reflect positive regarding the town and its personnel. Use of language gestures that may be considered offensive towards or harassing towards a citizen or an elected official, supervisor, employee who may take offense in an inappropriate and may result in disciplinary action. The letter you wrote does not have any documentation. No times, no dates, who it was, what was said, just salacious comments about community members and council members biased by your support for the mayor. By writing the letter, you have alienated many in the community. I, for one, am afraid to come into the office for fear something I say is misconstrued or that there is a bias for my statements that I am making here as a taxpayer and a citizen of this great community called Stevensville. In closing, if I could get answers to the questions I have asked, I have raised it, it would be greatly appreciated. No one has answered my letter in over 2 months. Thank you.
Okay, who's next for public comment? Ms. Howell.
That was like a filibuster. I think you guys ought to agree on maybe a 5-minute limit or something, because you have way too much business. That took up a lot of valuable time. And a lot of repetition. But my real comment is something positive. I just wanted to thank the town for the beautiful flowers. I think Monica was especially involved in that, for the trees that are going in and for the sidewalk down at the park by the bathrooms. These are all really important things that are getting done, and so thank you so much. Okay. Victoria Howe, 609.
Thank you. Further public comment?
Leslie Tadvik, 509 Mission Street. I'm just going back over a Prairie Populist. Mr. Mayor, do you remember that publication?
I do.
Okay. You had some really good ideas in here. The organization, the institution, works for the public. It gets the attitude that we want to have you work for us. So Brandon Dewey, the new Stevensville mayor, elected last November, and this was as of January 2018. Organizations, institutions, customer service, those weren't typical the words that came to mind when people talked about governor these days, but those are the words of Brandon Dewey, who took office in January, used over and over again when speaking to the Prairie populace. The mayor's number, he says, will be on speed dial, or you can just walk into your town hall during business hours if you want to see them. He talks about fixing potholes in our town. He talks about, I am a helper. He says, we want to present ourselves as an organization that has nothing to hide. Still, Mr. Dewey, better communication and efficiency comes with leadership, teamwork. It helps that he has experience and a diverse town council. I want to work with this incredible group of people. He says it's a tight budget and there isn't much wiggle room. It's also to raise taxes on the community with a median income of 32 and with many retired folks on fixed incomes. He said they're planning to save for the future ahead. By the way, nice picture of your family in here, too. He promises a vision for the future. He wants Stevensville's local government to be one of that other towns will model. Right now, I see nothing that would be modeled in this town. I see people over here on the side that should all resign their jobs. You work for us. You do not work for Mr. Dewey. You did this on town time, and it's not fair to the citizens of Stevensville that we pay your salaries while you get together and put a hate letter in the paper against the council and against the Dirty Dozen, right? And I am one of those members, and I am very proud of it, if that's what you want to call me. So, Mr. Owens, I believe you work for the town. You do not work privately for Mr. Dewey. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. All right. Well, what I'm saying is we have, yes, we have a recall on you, and I think all four of you should resign with that recall. It's the wishes of the town of Stevensville. We will vote this out, and it will turn out in our favor, but I am saying resign.
Further public comment.
Jim Tadvik, 509 Mission Street. I would just like the council to bring back the variance request by Mr. Larson. The way that was handled was inexcusable. He was given a building permit February 14th, and he proceeded, spent about $45,000. Then in May, he was put a stop order on it because of a parking. How many businesses in this town actually adhere to the parking ordinance? There might be three. The Lonesome Dove, CJ's, and one other one. I think that variance needs to be approved. Let the man finish his project. He's got $45,000 into it. Okay. The other question I have for you, Brandon, is did you ever refund the paraplegic that was recovering from a gunshot wound for the $50 you charged him to rehook his water after shutting the water off during the middle of the night without notice, and then you charge them $50 to hook it back up? I requested you refund that. and I want to know if you ever did.
I don't believe it was.
Was it not?
I'm not at the liberty to discuss a water account over public comment, Mr. Chadwick. I don't believe it was refunded. Further public comment?
That was completely uncalled for.
Chief, would you mind stepping outside and seeing if anyone outside wants to make public comment?
By the way, the town is not able to hear this.
We're doing the best we can, Ms. Tadvik. Thank you.
Thank you.
I wish to make a public comment.
Go ahead.
My name is Leanna Rodabaugh. I live at 204 Ravelli Street, Stevensville, Montana. I'm the author of the recall petition. I'm not going to discuss that right now. There's too much animosity in this town to even try. I would like to read a little note. Tonight on the agenda is correspondence from town employees and the publishers of the Bitterroot Star. All of this has already been published and probably read by everyone here. It is not necessary to read this other than as criticism toward the town council. Are you planning on qualifying these remarks with except for Jamie Devlin? At any rate, to just read letters that criticize a specific group is inherently unfair. So tonight I'm going to request that you read the correspondence you haven't read, or I can read it, I have it here, from Mr. Dwayne Bell. And he criticizes you. And if you're not man enough to do that, but you're man enough to criticize the council, it's kind of pathetic. You refused to read this when it was presented in February because it was too long. It needs to be read. This letter is all about the mistreatment of a town citizen. You are willing to waste your time with the correspondent you select, but not with somebody that criticizes you. So would you like to read it, or do you want me to read it?
Mr. Owens, is the litigation in that matter resolved? For the laundromat down the street here?
I don't believe
that. Is it advisable to have the letter read?
I would say no.
Okay. Here's your answer.
I think that's an opinion. So you're asking somebody that wasn't even asked to be here tonight for an opinion.
I am not going to read it, and I'm not going to give you permission to read it. The public comment opportunity is your floor.
May I read this? Anybody on the council?
Please address the chair.
Why? You don't have any authority to stop me from reading this, do you?
I don't, and so I'm saying you have the floor for public comment. Make your comment.
Can I read this?
I'm not going to give you permission to, and I'm not going to stop you. I'm not going to be involved in that. If you want to read the letter, that's your volition. I don't see how that's complicated.
I'm going to read it. First of all, it starts with a letter from Mr. Bell, July 9th, 2018. And he wrote a letter to the Ravalli County Environmental Health about his issue. He says, as per our phone conversation and your direction for me to fill out an official complaint due to the fact that I had met with the mayor, Brandon Dewey, and talked about both of the issues approximately 5 weeks ago, he said he would get back with me in a few days to go over the issue. I have yet to hear from him by phone or in person. This is why I was forced to call you due to the nature of the two complaints. Issue one. The grease from the hood of the Long Riders barbecue is dripping oil onto the roof and running off the roof and onto my parking area and alleyway. Cars are driving through it as well as people walking through it, tracking it everywhere. It is attracting flies and bees and is a health issue. It has started to run to the middle of the alley and then west to the city sidewalk. The hood must be cleaned and my alley power washed.
Issue two. There is a possibility that the sewer line of the Long Riders Barbecue connects into my sewer line at the mini market and laundry underneath my new addition. 32 years ago, the sewer line of the main plugged up and was dug up by the city. There was concern by four different gentlemen. Bruce Parks, town superintendent, Cy Gonzalez, owner of the store, George Chilcott, and another gentleman, who all agreed that there was a possibility that their sewer line comes over and connects to mine before going to the main. Also, through my observation during the stretch that the building next door was closed for 2 years, there were no problems with the sewer and drains. A perfect example of the situation is what happened with the drains at the Plum Local and Viva Asala restaurant in Stevensville. There is a simple solution that will take less than 10 minutes and cost nothing. Simply run a snake out of the drain, clean out the Long Riders Barbecue. Then have a locator come follow the snake. It will either go directly east or northeast to the mini market, which is totally illegal. At that point, we will know who is right and address the situation as needed. Respectfully, Dwayne Bell. So, he got tired of that, not being helped, so he wrote a letter to you through his attorneys. The attorney said, our firm represents Dwayne Bell, a resident of Stevensville and the owner of the Mini Market and Laundry Center, Inc., located at 108 Main Street in Stevensville. This letter is to refresh your knowledge of the constantly problematic sewer lines that run from Dwayne's business and to request the town of Stevensville immediately fix the sewer line for his property, reimburse Dwayne Bell for his efforts to maintain the town's sewer line, and to mitigate potential damages caused by the sewer line's illegal and faulty construction. This was written from the attorneys February 10th, 2020, and if it was turned over to our town attorney, it should have been resolved in some way by now, don't you think? Would have been a good idea. They go on to tell the background of how he suffered through all this. I could read it. It goes on and on and on. But all this man needs is something fixed. He requests that he be compensated for his efforts in maintaining the faulty sewer line in the amount of $6,000, which is cheap. He requests payment for his labor in clearing the sewer line each time for the very reasonable amount of $30 an incident. On the low end, he calculates that he had to unclog the sewer line at least 200 times over the last 36 years. Compared to the hourly fee a plumbing contractor would charge, possibly up to $100 an hour, Dwayne's request of $30 an incident is a very conservative estimate of compensation for Dwayne's services, and also compensation for the fee Brown Septic Service, Inc. charged Dwayne to camera the sewer line. And by the way, when they did camera it, they found out that indeed his line was connected to Lone Riders or whatever they're called. Even though everybody in town, the water and sewer department, said it wasn't. Why this can't be fixed, I have no idea. He hasn't done anything. You may not like him, or you may. It doesn't mean he can't be treated as a human being and a citizen of this town. This needs to be fixed, and it needs to be fixed now. This is why we have a town attorney. Not for him to advise you personally on a recall, but to take care of the citizens of this town and to answer different attorneys that have issues with the town. I suggest you figure out how to fix this. It would be nice. And you can always use something nice, Mr. Dewey.
Okay, any other public comment? All right, we'll move on with the agenda then. Next item of business is approval of minutes. We have the March 12th, 2020 and the March 20th, 2020 meeting minutes.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes as read.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Vick. Is there a second?
I'll second.
All right, moved by Mr. Vick, seconded by Ms. Devlin to approve the meeting minutes March 12th and March 20th, correct? All right, any discussion?
Brandon, we're going to step out and let two more people come in. And point to be made to everybody here that the governor is wrong, is not king, this is against
our constitution. Okay, thank you. Public comments over. Is there any council discussion on the minutes? Okay, is there any public comment on the council minutes? All right, hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Michelson.
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb.
Aye.
Councilmember Vick.
Aye.
Councilmember Devlin.
Aye.
Okay, motions pass. We have approval of the biweekly claims. In this case, it's ratification of claims 15819 through 15859 and ratification of claims 15824 through 15909. These were claims paid out of cycle during the COVID-19 shutdown.
I'll make a motion to approve this claim.
Okay, it's been moved to approve the claims. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Vick, seconded by Ms. Holcomb to approve the biweekly claims. Council discussion. Ms. Holcomb?
Yes, I was just wondering why we are still continuously paying this $2,100 when council voted to stop this until it was done correctly.
First call, as I explained in the email to you, Ms. Holcomb, and the rest of the council, First Call is providing services to us on a month-to-month basis because we need the services, whether or not a contract is in place. And it was budgeted for. We have the spending authority for the money. Further council discussion? Ms. Holcomb?
The $3,000 for MMIA for the Three Brokers LLC claim and the Wallace Smith claim, both at $1,500. What's that about?
Those are insurance claims related to the sewer department. Any further questions from council? Public comment on the claims? All right, hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Devlin.
Aye.
Councilmember Vick.
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb.
No.
Councilmember Michelson.
Aye.
Okay, claims are approved. Administrative reports will be covered at next week's meeting, and we don't have any guests to acknowledge tonight. Ms. Hoffman, would you please review the correspondence?
Yes, we have three this evening. The first one is through the Bitterroot Star. I'd be happy to read it. This was dated on May 1st, 2020. To town council members, it has come to our attention that three members of the Stevensville Town Council were recently communicating with each other over town business on a Facebook page, which is clearly illegal. Here's what the Montana Constitution says. Section 9, right to know. No person shall be deprived of the right to examine documents or to observe the deliberations of all public bodies or agencies of state government and its subdivisions, except in the cases in which the demand of individual privacy clearly exceeds the merits of public disclosure. Here is how the Montana Code annotated, defines a meeting. 2-3-202, meeting defined. As used in this part, meeting means the convening of a quorum of the constituent body, membership of a public agency or association described in 2-3-203. Whether corporal or by means of electronic equipment, to hear, discuss, or act upon a matter in which the agency has supervision, control, jurisdiction, or advisory power. Therefore, anytime a quorum of the governing body is hearing, discussing, or acting on a matter of public interest and is within their jurisdiction, the meeting shall be noticed to the public 48 hours in advance, and with enough detail in the public to know what is the council will hear, discuss, or act upon. Meeting minutes and public comment are also required. We ask you to discontinue these illegal communications immediately. Sincerely, Michael and Victoria Howe. The second correspondence. Open letter to Stevensville Town Council members and citizens of Stevensville. As employees of the town of Stevensville, we write this letter to express our frustration, hurt, and disappointment in several members of council, former elected officials, and certain community members whose ongoing and relentless actions against the town's administration have become unbearable. We feel that we are under attack and are subject to an unhealthy work environment. Over the past several months, we have saddeningly seen an increase in the number of disturbingly rude phone calls received, and we now find ourselves the target of spiteful internet slander. The individuals behind these actions who are vocally discussing town projects, services, policies, procedures, and staff members are doing so by twisting information and dismantling mistruths in which we see as an attempt to shame, discredit, and intimidate us. While we try to provide them with correct and factual information, it appears to go ignored. Please note that we, the public service staff, completely understand and respect a person's right to know their opinion under the Constitution. But the hateful reasons and hostile tone expressed have become so very concerning and upsetting. We, your town employees, categorically deny the allegations made against us by these individuals. Daily, we watch and react in dismay as these members of our community, which we proudly serve, are mistreating us individually and collectively and disruptively our abilities to satisfactorily perform our jobs. Their inquiries and requests for information, as well as responding to unfound allegations, have wasted countless hours on which we can only describe as a wild goose chase to try and accuse our mayor of illegal action to discredit him from the town's administration, us. Besides the obvious damage to staff, morale, and reputations, this is obviously a waste of resources and embarrassing to our town's reputation. Please know and understand that we, the town employees, recognize that serving the public is a privilege and we are proud to serve you. We take pride in our work and hard work to provide excellent customer service to all community members in a courteous manner. These slanderous remarks and internet postings serve only to create chaos and discord and purposefully reduce our ability to effectively perform our jobs. As your public service staff, we have few avenues to launch complaints against the unacceptable treatment and harmful behavior demonstrated towards us by certain members of council, former elected officials, and certain community members. Therefore, we have joined together in support of each other as we respectfully ask these individuals to discontinue their harassing, disruptive, and wasteful behavior. We understand that they immensely loathe our mayor. However, their blind obsession to force him out of office have once again found us, the staff of the town of Stevensville, in the crosshairs of their vicious attacks. These individuals and their ongoing rude and mindful-spirited behavior must stop for the good of all. We ask that we come together as a community to find solutions and respect each other. We encourage those people with issues or grievances or who wish to better understand the facts, just schedule a meeting with us. Signed by four of your town employees.
Can you read who wrote?
Monica Hoffman, Laura Miller, Janelle Berthau, and Robert Underwood. The third correspondence.
Can I ask who wrote that?
I just told you, ma'am. Ms. Hoffman, Laura Miller.
All together, we had a meeting.
Janelle Berthau.
Okay. We're just speaking correspondence.
And Robert Underwood. Okay.
Review the next piece, please.
So the third correspondence was received on June 2nd, Mr. Michelson, Ms. Devlin, Ms. Holcomb, and Mr. Vick. The purpose of this letter is to express our deep dissatisfaction and objection to the way the town council has been conducting the business of serving the citizens of Stevensville. The constant bickering, interference in day-to-day administration, mistreatment of employees. and the inability to work with each other and with Mayor Dewey are the antithesis of public service. These appears to be little interest in resolving this in a civil and mature manner. Quite the opposite. Not only has the council been embarrassing, dysfunctional, one member seems to be determined to expand the dysfunctionality and conflict beyond the council. One member in particular seems more interested in generating strife and failure than successfully serving the citizens of Stevensville. Our embarrassment is that he has allowed his personal animosities, lack of emotional control, and disregard for chain of command to preclude with his public service obligations as a council member. Unfortunately, our council members have been unable to curb or moderate his counterproductive behaviors. As citizens, we expect council members to focus on public service and to be committed to resolving the challenges Stevensville faces. Further, we expect you to have the ability to stifle your ego, set aside your biases, control your emotions, squash your animosities, and act in the best interest of our community. Our assessment is that the council has moved Stevensville backwards instead of supporting efforts to improve our community. Examples include interfering with and actively diminishing the morale of town employees, use of the council as a political stage, dividing our community, and failure to support the Main Street Association. Recent actions taken by the council appear to place personal beliefs and biases above the best interests of the community. You are in the town council to work together with Mayor Dewey to improve our community. We realize and understand this is challenging, especially given the budget you have to work with. However, current behaviors do not inspire confidence, cooperation, or volunteerism. This only makes the goal of improving our community harder to attain. Your function is not to supervise the mayor in the daily operation of the town. You are here to represent the community in the development of policies that guide and enable efficient operation and administration and that improve the quality of life in our community. If the energy put into strife, conflict, and dysfunction were instead focused on improving our community, we would all be better off. You should be making Stevensville a better place we can all stay proud of and are happy to call home. Sincerely, there are 16 signatures on the back. Would you like me to read them?
Yes, please.
Are the residents of Stevensville, by the way?
Okay, if the audience can refrain from comment while correspondence is being read, that'd be appreciated. Go ahead and read the names, please.
Chris Grove, Joseph Moore, John Grove, Sarah Grove, Kathleen Allen Moore, looks like Arlene Grove, Jim Notoro. Anna Marie McCormick, Dale
Dufresne,
Kathleen Notoro, Megan Hansen, Kathleen
Dufresne,
Jessica Shord, Patrick Shord, Janet Perrin, and Bill Perrin. And those are the three correspondents.
You should also have a letter from Mr. Kalkofen in your email. I just sent it over to you.
Oh. You have it?
Can we ask about whispering and stuff? It's very distracting.
If we can keep the discussion down in the audience, please. We're tracking down a little bit more correspondence here.
Is this one a citizen?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robert.
Oh, Lord. Concerned citizen. From Jim and Marcia Kalkofen?
Kalkofen, yeah.
Kalkofen, okay. Looks like it was addressed to Ms. Devlin, Ms. Holcomb, Mr. Vick, Mr. Michelson, and Mayor Dewey. To council and mayor, the option was simple. Attend the upcoming council meeting or go fishing to Fort Peck. While fishing for walleyes and pike, I will be wondering about the annexation issue. Please enter my concern into the public comments. Read it at the meeting if that is how this occurs. My concern is with the proposed annexation. From page 40 of the agenda at both November 7th and November 19th, 2019 council meetings, the council stated, as a condition of annexation, the town is seeking a contract. The minutes of the March 12, 2020 council meeting included this sentence. Town council decided to table resolution 470 with the intent to wait for a contract. There is no contract associated with the annexation question in the agenda packet. There are a few comments from the attorney. There should be at least a letter of understanding signed by both parties if this annexation is to move forward. However, this annexation should be halted now. There were several people who were apprehensive at the March council meeting since this property is either on or adjacent to designated wetlands. Their problems rested with the potential of contamination due to heavy equipment and or fuel tanks that will be stored on the property. They also raised the specter of a building that close to the present and potentially future town wells. This issue must, in my opinion, be explored and resolved before annexation proceeds. After all, I will be drinking from those wells. Will most people in this audience. There is one other issue from the March meeting that has not been addressed and deserves to be on the table. That issue is the C2 commercial designation. Why designate the entire parcel C2? Why not just the area required for a business? Besides, until the issue of the wetlands is answered, there should be no business that involves fuel in that area. Thanks to the council for considering my thoughts. Signed by Jim Colquhoun.
Thank you. Mr. Michelson.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make a motion to suspend council rules and move items A and B under new business up to right below public hearing so the people outside can get their business done, the school board and that, and get moved on.
Okay. Your motion is to suspend council rules and move 11A and 11B to follow 9A. Correct?
That's correct, sir.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to suspend council rules and move new business items 11A and 11B to follow 9A of the public hearings. Any council discussion? Any public comment? Hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Holcomb?
Aye.
Councilmember Devlin?
Aye.
Councilmember Vick?
Aye.
And Councilmember Michelson?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes. We'll move into public hearings. Public hearing tonight is regarding the Phillips Street right-of-way vacate. This item was previously scheduled and has been since rescheduled. It's an item that's come before council multiple times, and the concept itself has been approved, but there's a formal process in actually vacating the right-of-way before that is done. So with that, do you have anything you'd like to present at the public hearing? You want to see if there's any public comment on the matter first?
We can we do have a presentation if you'd like to go over the plan again. We'd be happy to open it up for public comment as well.
Is the council interested in hearing the plan once more? Okay, there's that answer. We'll open the floor for public comment. Public comment is being received on vacating the Phillips Street right-of-way. Any public comment? Mr. Motley.
Jeff Motley, Steel Hill Fire Chief. In light of vacating the right-of-way on the current Phillips Street, I've talked with both engineering and I guess the design company and also the mayor. It is paramount that fire hydrant that is currently on Park and Phillips can be left there, but we need a new fire hydrant at the new end of the proposed Phillips Street where it would dump out and continue on to the east. So we have water service to those buildings. Otherwise, we'll have to some way, somehow, cross the new proposed playground in order to get water to the other end of the buildings, of the property there, the elementary gymnasium, and then water on up into the football field, concession stand, and those things. So that would be my only question. It's been mentioned to me that, yes, they were looking at that, and that, that is all in the works. I've not seen anything in writing or a drawing of that, so that would be my comment.
Thank you. Is there any further public comment from the audience on Phillips Street's vacate? Okay, Ms. Hoffman does have one letter we received by email. Can you go ahead and read that?
This is from David Hubble. To whom it may concern, I am writing to express my concern with what the school is trying to do with the Phillips Street right-of-way and getting rid of or moving said street. I am against moving the street. I am not happy about the things the school is doing with their money, and I think it can be better used in a different way. They passed a huge bond saying they didn't have any money and needed to do all this stuff. I would like to know where they got all the money to buy the old Palmer house and property if they didn't have any money. After the teacher union negotiations, it came out that they have a fund they was kept from the teachers and public that had $1 million in it, all while saying they didn't have any money to do deferred repairs. When they wanted us to pass their bond, I still didn't know how much they suggested our taxes were going to go up based on the value of our houses, and many other people couldn't find that info either. After following their website to find out what it was that led the people I talked to a dead end with no answer. So I think that the school should live within its means and just leave things alone. I mean, the junior high, since it was built, has had all kinds of problems and issues from the get-go. How can I trust they will even get this thing right? I also thought MRL, Montana Rail Link, denied their request to move the right-of-way from where it currently sites. So why the push to still do it? Things that make you go, Thanks, David Hubble.
Okay. And the item under council's consideration later following the public hearing is to whether or not to vacate. It is not necessarily to determine the financing of the street or what the school does with their bond. Just to clarify that point. Any further public comment?
Vicki Motley, 318 9th Street. I am a teacher, and the vacating of Phillips Street is crucial. Right now, our kids have to cross Phillips Street in order to get to the playground. By vacating it and rerouting it, the kids will be able to go across from our building to their playground safely without worry of vehicles coming through. So I encourage you to vacate this and let the school proceed.
Okay. Any further comment? All right, we'll close the public hearing for the Phillips Street right-of-way vacate and move on to new business item A, discussion decision on resolution 472. A resolution vacating the 80-foot right-of-way known as Phillips Street and authorizing a utility easement. This is similar to other vacates that have been done in the past where because we have utilities lying in the right-of-way, we are retaining an easement with an understanding that we can access that strip of property to make maintenance to our utilities as necessary. It would deed the property back to the school district with that easement, and then later would reestablish that right-of-way for the Phillips Street traffic. Mr. Michelson?
I made the motion to approve Resolution 472, a resolution vacating the 80-foot right-of-way known as Phillips Street, authorizing a utility easement.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Michelson, seconded by Mr. Vick. to approve Resolution 472, resolution vacating the 80-foot right-of-way known as Phillips Street and authorizing utility easement. Council discussion?
With that easement, we get to keep our hydrant there like Mr. Motley's wanting to keep, right?
Correct. That lies within the Park Avenue right-of-way.
He's asking for an additional also, correct?
Correct, yep.
And that's not addressed in here.
It doesn't necessarily need to be addressed in the right-of-way vacate. Mm-hmm. We've addressed it in our conditions of approval for the plan set. And the school district has had no problem with that discussion. So the hydrant's been addressed. Any further discussion from council on vacating? Any public comment on vacating? Okay, hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Devlin?
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb?
Aye.
Councilmember Vick?
Aye.
And Councilmember Michelson?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes. Going on to new business item B then, it's discussion decision, resolution 473, a resolution establishing a 60-foot right-of-way known as Phillips Street. As it's been noted, we're rerouting the Phillips Street traffic further to the south. The railroad crossing and will remain where it is now. It will just go around the school property compared to where it is today. So,
I'll make a motion to approve Resolution 473.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Vick, seconded by Ms. Devlin, to approve Resolution 473, reestablishing the right-of-way. Council discussion?
Does this one have the hydrant in it?
Same notion as previously stated. Any further council discussion on reestablishing? Public comment? All right, hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Holcomb?
Aye.
Councilmember Michelson?
Aye.
Councilmember Vick?
Aye.
Councilmember Devlin?
Aye.
All right, motion passes. It was painless for you.
Yeah, well, thank you
very much. You bet. Give folks a chance to move about. Okay, moving into unfinished business, we'll wait just a moment. Let some folks in because they'll be related to this. There's three seats right up here for you guys, and that's a good spot for you. Mr. Kellogg, Mr. and Mrs. Reeves, thanks for joining us. You have impeccable timing. We just hit your item. We're on unfinished business item 10A, discussion decision, easement contract with Jesse Reeves for future well field. This carries over from our two November council meetings as well as a March council meeting where we discussed the concept of a easement somewhere on the Reeves property for future well field placement. After considerable discussion with the city attorney on whether a contract, I guess backing up a bit, we don't know where that easement would lie on that property because we currently don't know what our needs are for the water system and where that infrastructure may lie on the 26-acre parcel that Mr. and Mrs. Reeves own. We considered contracting with Mr. and Mrs. Reeves to secure an easement later down the road. It was the sentiment of the city attorney that that wouldn't hold any weight if it were ever challenged, that a contract like that would be very flimsy. And so with that information, the administration recommends that we don't proceed with the contract at this time. It is our philosophy that the town council and the town waived its right of first refusal on the property because you trusted Mr. Reeves' intentions with the property and you trusted that he would come through on his word to work with the town on future infrastructure on that property. And so we're suggesting that perhaps you undertake that same philosophy in the annexation of his property and annex him because you trust he will do good by the town as our neighbor, rather than tying the annexation up with a contract. There is risk There was risk in waiving the right of first refusal in the first place. We've discussed this with Mr. Reeves, and he maintains good that he will work with the town in the future. There's no guarantee as to what that will look like because the town doesn't know what its needs are for what that will look like. Mr. Owens, is there anything else you'd like to add to that?
It's going to go off my questions.
Yep.
Okay. No, I think you've summarized it. I think the big issue is that we don't have any specificity as to where the wells would go, and so we wouldn't be able to hold Mr. Reeves to whatever we put in the contract. And the annexation is what we were exchanging, so in any contract you have, there's got to be a this for that, what we call consideration. And I think what was originally anticipated by the council or by the town was that we would exchange the annexation for a promise to allow building on the property. But we don't know what that was. And I have spoken with Mr. Reeves about this, and I think he understands the situation. So that's the situation. Do you have any questions? Yes, Mr. Mike.
My question, Scott, would be, I was looking at the notes all the way back to last November or something when this first came up, and then in January, and both times, you were asked to supply some sort of a contract, something in writing. My question would be is, what's to stop it down the road for future development if we don't have anything in writing to stop that?
Can you explain
the question? Well, I mean, here's a good example here, Scott. On the general provisions, it's got Exhibit A, Town of Stephenville Annexation Service Plan. This is basically a contract. Effective term, the service plan shall be in effect for a 10-year period commencing on the effective date of the annexation. What's that mean? After 10 years, this is all null and void?
I can speak to that.
Okay.
The service plan is a requirement by state law. Anytime you annex a piece of property, the municipality is required to write a plan for services as to how the municipality plans to deliver services to that parcel. That's what that plan is. So it does not mean that at the end of a 10-year span, the property is unannexed. What it means is within a 10-year span, the town has to have its act together and provide the services it's promised per the services plan. If we fail on that, then we're out of compliance with our services plan. But it also means that after 10 years, if we've provided the services that we've promised to provide, that the town is protected to go back if Mr. Reeves or the property owner at the time said, I want these services, well, we'd go back to that services plan and we'd look at to see what did we promise when that property was annexed. We did a similar practice, because anytime you annex, you do that. We did something similar to that with the airport. When we annexed the airport property, which we owned anyway, when we annexed it, we declared that area infrastructure deficient to let the town off the hook on a couple of service providing pieces, namely water and sewer. We didn't want the expectation that as soon as we were annexed, we were going to deliver water and sewer services to that area. Okay. So it isn't necessarily a contract, but it is a legal document that says we promise to deliver services to this piece of property within this time frame.
And also, I have a question as far as maintenance and roads and streets and lighting. Since the town will assume the responsibility for maintenance of public streets and roads directly adjacent to or within the annexation territory, any such streets or roads formerly maintained by Ravalli County, and become subject to town maintenance will be maintained in a condition which is at least equal to the county maintenance standard. However, the town will not be required to reconstruct or upgrade such streets to a higher standard. So what I'm reading is the town takes on the responsibility of some of the roads that are adjacent. Would it have to do with the highway?
Not necessarily. There's no highway adjacent to this parcel. Middleburn Fork Road and Logan Lane would be the only two county roads adjacent to this parcel. In annexation law, it states that anytime a parcel is annexed, its adjacent roads are also annexed.
Okay. And then, of course, we know we don't have the water rights. Nobody has any water rights. It's tied up with the water rights lawyer, and what about the pond? The pond issue is big. We got those wetlands back there, and what's to say that those won't be compromised if we don't have something in writing?
I don't disagree with you on that, Mr. Michelson, but I guess that was part of the rationale behind why the town wanted to purchase the property in the first place, and the council at the time declined to do so, and based on the word that Mr. Reeves gave us that said he wasn't planning to make any changes or modifications to the pond. So I guess I don't have a direct answer for you.
I firmly believe that annexation shouldn't go forward without something, either some type of a writing or a contract to state some of this stuff, because this is the third time now that this has come forward and we've asked for some type of a contract. Mr. Vick and I asked from the March meeting in the notes that we table this in order to get something in writing as far as a contract, and I guess we still don't have one tonight.
Okay, so and I guess it, Scott and I have discussed the idea that if the council wanted to proceed with contract, we can do a contract. We just want you to be fully aware, and we want to disclose that contract won't hold weight. It's a piece of paper. It formalizes some things, but if Mr. Reeves signed a contract with us that he was going to do certain things on the property based on this conversation, and then did the opposite, we'd have a hard time holding him to that contract.
And that's correct, Mr. Michelson. I think that the problem is we don't have any specificity as to where we need land, what we would be putting on the property. I can put together a contract. I don't think it's going to do a whole lot when we decide years from now a location that we want to use, and that is not specified in the contract because we don't know what it is. And at that time, when it's presented to Mr. Reeves, he could say, I didn't agree to that. Does that make sense? Without knowing that stuff now. So I don't know what I'm drafting.
Yeah.
I could put something general together. I don't think it's going to do much for us, though, if that makes sense.
I think there should be something in writing, Scott, other than just a handshake and good faith. That's a big thing when a town annexed property into the town. It's a great base for taxes and everything, but there's got to be a stopgap somewhere where Chris stopped, not to say that he would, but down the road he wants to develop that place. It's his property, annexed with the town.
What, one of my concerns would be, Mr. Michelson, that if you don't move forward with annexation, say you don't tonight, the fact remains that Mr. Reeves tomorrow can do whatever he wants with that property,
oh, yeah,
whether he's annexed or not. And so I guess if you make it a condition of annexation that we have a contract, and he doesn't agree with that, one option is he withdraws his request to annex and he does whatever he wants with his property adjacent to the town and we're up a creek anyway. Or we move forward with annexing him. We can put a contract into place. We can go forward with annexing him without a contract in place and work, go on the same handshake that we moved on when we waived our right first refusal. Mr. Michelson?
And also, we've designated this a C2 limited commercial district. Its intended use is to serve as a transitional buffer between residential areas and a more intensely developed downtown area. So I think it's out of whack because it's not a downtown buffer for the downtown district. And some people have also stated that down the road, maybe what if they want to put a mini mart or something out there? It is a commercial district.
We'll address zoning when we get to the actual question of annexation. And there's some options for the council to consider when we get to that spot. Right now, you're more or less, the item before you is whether or not you have a contract with Mr. Reeves prior to annexing.
I'll make a motion to reject the idea of having a contract before annexation.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Vick, seconded by Ms. Devlin, to reject the idea of having a contract prior to annexation. Council discussion? Public comment? Vicki, are you heading this way? No? Okay. Mr. Gibson's up. We'll get to you, Ms. Rodebaugh.
I'll sign this when I'm done. Steve Gibson, Stevensville. And I'm not commenting on this motion. I'm commenting on the agenda. Yes, we did. I was the one that talked about good faith with Reeves in November. But that was about an easement to the existing wells. There was nothing about annexation. This has gotten so large, I don't understand what's going on here. They wanted to be hooked up to water and sewer. They stated that they were not able to get a permit for their own well from DEQ. In August of last year, Mayor, you stated to me that the wells that are there now were not legally permitted by DEQ, and there was a possibility it could go to water court. Again, this has gotten so large, and there were meetings and there were discussions. Wetlands, water rights, C2. My understanding of the March meeting was that there was a request to move this back to the board. This was never about annexation. This was about the Reeves, and I'm not going to speak for them. They wanted to build a place. They wanted to move their kids close to town. And they said they would give easement rights to the existing wells and maybe possibly the pond. But other people have brought up this pond might be an issue as wetlands. This needs to go back to the board or at least wait and have a contract. There are so many questions here, a lot more than answers. And again, I supported the Reeves. But that was on an easement to the existing town's need. And they wanted to be hoofed up to water and sewer. And this thing has just skyrocketed. This needs to be tabled, in my opinion, go back to the board, and also, Monica, that letter that you read from Mr. Kalkofen, that was on this agenda item, you know, with your zooming and all that. So, I mean, that was on this agenda item that you read. But again, this, and back in November, I and the council requested, and I'll ask Councilman Vick and Councilman Holcomb if they recall this, that the town attorney, the staff, and George, and Mayor, you too, get with the Reeves and work this out. And here we sit 9 months later. And my understanding is nobody's talked to George, but I'm not going to speak for George. That was 9 months ago. 9 months ago. And as we said in November, an easement between a private property owner and a government entity is not that difficult. But now you're taking it a different route. Annexation, water rights, wetlands, C2, traffic. This does not just affect that area. This could affect, as that letter stated, the existing wells, drinking water. I don't mistrust the Reeves. They want to be hooked up to water and sewer. That's what they want. And they said they'd give the easement to the existing town property. Thank you.
Right about, he said, comment.
He said what I was going to say.
Okay. Tell up.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of council. For the record, I'm John Kellogg with Professional Consultants, and I'm here on behalf of JC and Rebecca. I guess I'd like to back up a little bit. I think a lot of the issues have been addressed and worked on through this process. The city attorney has met with Jesse and discussed the situation, and if I'm not mistaken, Jesse's agreed that he would grant an easement to the town for the pond. I think that's the crucial aspect of this. So I think we have resolved many of the issues, and I guess further on I'd like to talk about zoning. But I think we're at a point where the Reeves would like some resolution of this so that they could move forward. And I think it could be a benefit, a big benefit to the town and to the Reeves. So I think there's really not a drawback to this proposal. So I'd encourage you to move forward. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And just to clarify for public comment, we're on whether or not a contract is in place for annexation. The next item of business is the actual annexation. So, any public comment on the contract, Ms. Barker?
Stacy Barker, 104 Winslet. I guess after looking at the plans of also putting this as a C2 zoning, my concerns is, has anybody even done testing or done any observations on that particular intersection? Because there are a lot of accidents that happen there, for one. That, for me, would be a big concern, putting it out there. And then also hearing that a possibility of big trucks being out there, I don't know if that's true or not, but that also brings concern. And also, quit threatening the council with what the precautions could be. They're your council.
Mr. Smith, comment on the contract.
Raymond Smith, 326 Valley View. With an annexation, and as you said, we have to provide services out there. Again, my understanding is we're pretty much tapped out on our services. We as a community are still fighting for our own water rights that we are currently pumping that we don't have rights to pump. But we're going to provide services out there. I think there should be a contract of some sort, if it is approved, to address all these issues. I have questions regarding why the DEQ would refuse them, the property owners, the right to put their own well in. Then again, we get to the wetlands issue. Then we get to the town, again, having to maintain areas when we can barely maintain the areas that we have. So my concern is with the water. We already are, you know, tapped out on our water system as it is. And so that is my concern.
Okay, any further public comment? All right, hearing none, the motion on the floor is to reject having a contract in place prior to annexation. With that, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Holcomb?
No.
Councilmember Devlin?
Yes.
Councilmember Michelson?
No.
Councilmember Vick?
Aye.
Okay. It's a 2-2 tie. The mayor votes aye. Moving on to discussion decision resolution 470, annexing attractive land located in section 35, township 9 north, range 20 west, 26.06 acres, identified on certificate of survey number 691110-R, tract 1B. The annexation before you tonight, as it's been suggested through comments and others, that the Reeves desire to have water and sewer services on their property for residents. And in order to facilitate that, they need to be annexed in. Municipal code requires annexation in order to be provided services. There are a few exceptions to that for under grandfathering for folks who were connected prior to an ordinance like that going into place, but current ordinance requires that they're annexed in order to receive water and sewer services, and that's somewhat how we received or got to this point on the annexation. The annexation plan in your packet outlines how the town plans to provide services to the property services, for the most part, I believe that the Reeves are planning to access the property primarily from the Twin Creeks subdivision, and then they want water and sewer services. So it's primarily streets, water and sewer, police and fire protection that are being provided. And then, of course, when we annex, we bring in any adjacent roads. So. This is an opportunity for the council to discuss the zoning of the property. The annexation application does request a C2 zoning. And I understand that there are some citizens and some council members who have concerns over that C2 zoning. So you have a couple of options. You can move forward and zone it C2. You can give it an interim zoning designation. State law allows you to zone something on an interim basis temporarily until a zone can be developed for that piece of property. So if there are certain requirements you would like to see for a certain type of use in a property, you can task the Planning and Zoning Board to create that zone with your input. So you could move forward with annexation tonight, giving it an interim zoning designation with conditions, and then tasking the zoning board to create that zone based on the conditions you've applied to it. The other options you have are you could zone it strictly R1 or R2. The adjacent property is listed as R1 or zoned as R1 in the Twin Creek subdivision. So you could list it compatible to that. And if there were additional requests for other uses, you could subsequently grant conditional use permits down the road for those uses, should they be requested. So you have lots of options. C2 was requested, and so that was what's listed on the application. The administration didn't see any reason not to move forward with the C2 zoning, but given the input you've received so far, you know, it's not an all or nothing in this annexation. You can put whatever conditions you'd like as far as zoning is concerned on this parcel. Within reason. You can't tell him what to necessarily do on the property, but you can limit certain activities. How would council like to proceed? Mr. Michelson.
I'd like to see it go to planning and zoning to hash it out to see find out all the details to see what we want to do with it. Instead of us to judge and hear on what zone we want to do, would the planning and zoning be able to make a recommendation to the council?
This has been before planning and zoning, correct? Mr.
Yes.
Kellogg?
Not to rezone it, I mean, other than C2.
Correct. Planning and zoning reviewed the C2 designation and they were in favor of C2.
And our recommendation was in favor of the C2.
Correct. So you have planning and zoning's recommendation to zone it C2, or you can make your own recommendation or designation.
We can always do an interim C2 and let planning and zoning decide and what will be best for it.
Mm-hmm. Bob, were you making a motion or were you just speaking?
No, I wasn't making a motion.
Okay.
I'm going to make a motion to change the, well not change, I can't change their petition, but do an interim C2.
Okay. Mr. Vick, am I taking the intent of your motion to approve annexation as an interim C2 zone?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a second? Okay. Motion dies for lack of a second.
Second.
Oh, it already failed, but if you're willing to second the motion. No one else had seconded, so the motion failed for lack of a second. But if you want to revive it, we can consider the motion.
I'll restate my motion.
Okay, Mr. Vick, go ahead.
No, I was saying the same thing.
Okay, Mr. Vick's motion is to approve annexation with C2 zoning on an interim basis. Is there a second? Mr. Michelson?
Second.
Okay, moved by Mr. Vick, seconded by Mr. Michelson to approve annexation with the condition of a C2 interim zone. To clarify the interim zone piece, and I don't necessarily see an issue with how you're proceeding, because if you down the road decide to rezone the property a different zone, I think that's completely acceptable. However, the intent of the interim zoning was to say the interim zone would be, you could say the interim zone would be a certain, you know, you can call it, the interim zoning district would be these limitations, whether that be that the property owner is only permitted to use it for a residential use and home-based construction company, as an example. That's basically what he wants to do. The interim zoning wasn't necessarily intended to be used as a to temporarily zone something what we already have zoning for. Does that make sense? Okay. So, I mean, your motion is acceptable, but I wanted you to be clear on what the intent of the interim zoning idea was, so that if you wanted to amend something, you could, if that
was. Yeah, I wasn't done with motions. I was actually going to go.
Okay. Very good. I'll let you go.
So I'm going to make a motion for that for our interim requirements is that it is only for his construction company and single family residence at this time.
Okay. I apologize. Was that a motion?
Yes.
Okay. Is there a second to Mr. Vick's motion to stipulate single-family residential use and construction company?
Second.
Okay. It's been moved by Mr. Vick and seconded by Mr. Michelson to place interim restrictions in the C2 zone for this parcel of single-family residential use and construction.
And I do have a question, too, because if I remember correctly, back in November, he discussed possibly putting horses on there as well. With this, I know we do have our livestock plan where it's like 1.5 cows per 3 acres or something like that. Would he still be allowed for that use with this?
C2 is a blended use between residential and commercial, so I don't see any prohibition of keeping livestock on the property. He would just have to adhere to what I recall is a cow and a half and a horse and a half per acre.
Right, okay.
So he's got 26 acres. He can keep plenty of ponies.
Okay. I like horses.
Okay. Any further discussion from council?
Did we even get a letter from Planning and Zoning to show that they recommend this? I don't remember seeing a letter.
I don't know if a letter, I mean, it was a January meeting, correct, when Planning and Zoning met?
Yes, and we sent minutes, and I believe we sent a letter.
At one point, it was included in a council communication to you folks.
Ms. Can I ask
Devlin?
Mr. Reeves?
Sure.
So construction company, that's really big. Like, that's very broad.
Mm-hmm.
What is your construction company? What are you, residential, commercial, industrial? How many employees do you have? Are they going to be dropping vehicles off, equipment off at your place? Are they coming in and out with that equipment? What does this look like?
So we're
Jesse, do you mind stepping into the podium?
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
So we're a small residential custom home builder. We have 3 employees. Rarely do they ever come to our home base. It's, you know, 95% of the time we're on a job site. 95% of the time our equipment is on job sites. You know, as far as what we would be doing, you know, we want to build a shop. And when I say shop, that's kind of my generalized term for, you know, it's going to look like a barn. That's, you know, we build custom homes. A lot of times we use reclaimed materials. It's kind of like my forte. And so what we build is, you know, going to be a showpiece for what we do. And so our goal is to showcase what we do. And so it's going to look like an old barn, but it'll be our workshop. And so we have, you know, 2 excavators, 1 little dump truck, you know, some trailers. We never do commercial work. I hope to never do commercial work. So that's kind of what we do. It's a pretty small company. So, yeah.
Do you have plans for growth?
Yeah, absolutely.
What is that plan?
I think my plan for growth is, you know, in terms of general contracting, is actually more or less hands-on, mm-hmm. so and more subcontracting. That, in my opinion, is how, you know, our business grows to be bigger. So then it would actually minimize how much is actually going on at our place. And so, you know, that's our vision.
So, thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Any further discussion from council on the annexation, or excuse me, more or less, the motion on the floor right now is an interim zoning designation limiting the property use to single-family residential use and construction. Anything further from council? Okay, call for public comment. Mr. Gibson.
Steve Gibson, Steve. It's just hard to hear. So what are you proposing now? You're not proposing the annexation. You're proposing CT2 zoning.
So the motion on the floor right now is, okay, so we have two motions. The first motion changes the zoning limitations of that property so that they can only use the property for single-family residential use and to house a construction company. Secondary to that, the motion is to annex with those restrictions.
So you're back to the total annexation that you were talking about earlier?
Correct.
Even in regards to the issues with wetlands, wells, traffic, all that?
Correct.
I don't think you should do that. Again, I want the Reeves to be able to build their home and maybe even have their business, but again, it just took a cup of water and sewer. It was not for the town to take over maintenance of county roads. Those questions have still not been answered that are very important, whether it's annexation or not. This water rights issue, this wetlands issue is a huge issue, and nobody's addressed that. Mr. Kellis said some things, none of that's been addressed. It's very important to this whole town. I'm not here to deny them the right to build, but this was never about annexation. It was about easement that the town had so they could hook up to water and sewer. I think you're going, without further looking into this, again, for the people of Stevensville, and we know what this town is built upon, half of it's a swamp, you know, the golf course is closed, you know, we have water coming back. Most years I've lived here, some pumps run. But you got an issue with wetlands, water rights, all types of things. I personally would not feel comfortable moving forward with total annexation. And again, I would go back to Councilman Vick and Councilman Holcomb. When we discussed this in November, none of this was discussed. It was to have the ability to get easement, as George wanted, and they could hook up to water and sewer. That's all it was. Thank you.
Further public comment. Mr. Kellogg?
Thank you. Again, John Kellogg, PCI. The decision to apply for C2 zoning was not made lightly. We worked with Reeves carefully to look through Stevensville's zoning ordinance, which is kind of complicated and a little rigid in places and difficult to work with. So when we're looking at the needs that the Reeves had, the C2, although it's called commercial, it's a very limited commercial. The description that Councilman Michelson read is not a restrictive type of description, but something that suggests what this C2 zoning should look like. It says the C2 limited commercial district
is intended to serve as a transitional buffer between residential areas and more intensely developed downtown area. Small-scale commercial and recreation uses generate little traffic or allowed together with a wide range of residential uses. It's interesting. If you go through the uses that are allowed here, and I think you're probably familiar with the charts within zoning, residential really pops out in the C2 district. In fact, more residential uses are allowed in C2 than in the R1 and R2. So I just like to say that we think the C2 is an appropriate direction to go. The Reeves, I think, are in agreement with Mr. Vick's proposal, and we encourage you to approve it. Thank you.
Okay, further comment on the C2 designation with restrictions. Mr. Reeves.
Jesse Reeves, 3747 Devon Loop. So, to my understanding, you know, when we've been discussing this previously, you know, we want to get hooked up to sewer and water. Well, annexation and hooking up to sewer and water are one and the same. So, I don't believe that those are two separate issues. And as far as the wetlands concern, I mean, right in the paperwork that we received from, I believe it's the DNRC, would that be who?
That'd be accurate, for water rights?
Yeah, for water rights. Mm-hmm. I mean, right on there is a water right designation for the ponds, for fish and wildlife. So, in my thinking, well, doesn't that already, I mean, isn't that protected right there? I mean, if I were to be like, hey, I'm gonna go dip into that pond and dig out, you know, 500 more yards of gravel, I would imagine I'd be breaking the law. And if, you know what I mean, the DNRC has already, you know, that thing has been reclaimed and, you know, labeled fish and wildlife. So what more protection would come with that, you know, if the state of Montana recognizes that as protected? And so I don't feel like that's an issue. That would literally be us breaking the law, which we'd have no intention of doing. And so I'm concerned about that as well. I don't want my water to be polluted. I understand that there's always the possibility of us selling the property and who you know, who's going to do what, but I mean, if that's, you know, that designation already, I don't see where there's the concern with that. So as far as the annexation, you know, my question is, you know, yes, those two roads would now encompass city services, but you know, that other piece of property on the other side is still county. Like, wouldn't there be some sort of, you know, county still maintaining that? I don't know, and this is the thought I had. So, that was it. Okay.
Ms. Rodabaugh, you have a comment?
Maybe I just don't know the answer to this or anything. What does this cost the town to put water and sewer in there? And what does the town get for it? Do we get a mythical easement that we can't write a contract for? And then we spend whatever amount of money. Who knows how much this will cost? Does anybody, have you figured it out? Anybody?
If we were to move forward with annexation tonight, it would not cost the town anything. It will cost Mr. Reeves to hook to the system. The cost
so
to hook.
He pays for it?
He pays to hook to our system, and then he pays a monthly fee
and
to
then we
be
have
connected.
To maintain the system for some kind of maybe easement. Is that correct?
there's no system in place for the easement. I guess that's the question that has not been answered, is what does that, what would be in that easement?
Yeah, I just don't understand the value that the town gets. I understand the value they get.
We get property taxes.
And what would the property taxes be?
I don't know that.
You don't know it. Okay.
You know it?
Nobody knows.
Hasn't been
annexed. So we're going to do something that nobody knows. Period.
Further public comment. George?
So, if you annex this property, the town becomes responsible, if he wants to build more, for water mains, through mains, streets, lighting, that comes at the town's cost. Not at his cost. He asked at one point for one house in November. Then I get a letter that they want two houses. So you might want to be very careful what you do here. Right now they have a gravel operation going on up there. They're moving those piles of gravel. So that's another issue.
Further public comment? Streets?
So just to clarify, we do not have a gravel operation going. There are piles of topsoil that were from the previous gravel operation, and I would like to use some of that topsoil for my personal use. And so I have a topsoil screening plant that I'm going to screen my personal topsoil from. We're not opening a gravel pit. We're not selling gravel commercially. So, just to clarify.
Sure. Thank you. All right, any further public comment? Okay, the motion on the floor right now is to stipulate single-family residential use and construction use on the interim C2 zone.
And I want to clarify that's one single-family residence.
Okay. Further discussion from council before I call for the vote? Right, hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Michelson?
No.
Councilmember Holcomb?
No.
Councilmember Devlin?
No.
Councilmember Vick?
Aye.
Okay, motion fails 3-1. The motion on the floor is to approve annexation with an interim C2 zone, so no restrictions. Is there further council discussion on that motion? Is there further public comment on the motion?
Jeff Motley, 13 Main Street. I understand everybody's concern, but leave it in the county, now the county controls it. If you guys annex it, you now have annexation, now you have codes and ordinances and things that would control what happens up there at 26 acres. By not annexing it, the county controls all that. So, who's worse? Us or them?
Steve Gibson, I wasn't going to come up again until after that. Again, I guess I stated all the concerns, and I think it's too early to move forward. But what he just said, I think, is the opposite. The county pays for the road maintenance now. This would make the town pay for the road maintenance. And I hope you listen to George. Thank you.
Further public comment? Mr. Kellogg.
Thank you. I think in clarification of the road maintenance depends on whether the town decides they want to, or they have the right to maintain Middle Burntworth or Logan Monument, I think is the question. If Mr. Reeves wants to put more houses or appropriate uses on the property, he would have to go through some form of subdivision review, saying, okay, he wants to build another house or two on the property. That would come back before you, before that could be done, the infrastructure needed to access any new development in the future. Now, I'm hypothesizing something that he hasn't even thought about, would be his responsibility to put the streets and extend the water and sewer mains into that development if it happened. And he'll say he has no plans on this, but I'm trying to answer some points that have come up by other people that say it's the town that's going to be stuck with building this stuff. If somebody wants to subdivide, that's the individual's responsibility to extend the utilities, water, sewer, streets into that development. So it's not a cost to the town, although the town may ultimately pick up the maintenance of any new streets. I think, with your indulgence, I'd just like to go through the zoning permissions within C2 limited commercial. And it's kind of enlightening because when you think of commercial, you think about downtown, you think lights, access, or traffic, noise, and everything like that. C2 is designed to be appropriate adjacent to residential. So it acts as a buffer. And so the uses, there are only a few manufacturing, it's like apparel, leather goods, printing, publishing, computer software, something that doesn't generate a lot of noise. In addition to that, video arcades aren't allowed, casinos aren't allowed, theaters, nightclubs aren't allowed. This is important. Boarding or commercial kennels aren't allowed. And I think the folks in Twin Creeks would be happy at that. The residential uses are what's allowed in R1 and R2, single family, multifamily. In addition to that, there are opportunities for bed and breakfast, assisted living, and other residential uses that maybe are less intensive than what you'd think in commercial. So, in addition to that, business services, finance, offices, personal services, family daycare, group daycare, repair services, and this isn't auto repair, this is repair services for clothes, small appliances, watches, glasses, and other such items. So we're not talking about major impact here. Professional services, government services, private schools, churches. And so you get the idea that this is not a noisy, impactful commercial zone. It's something that's intended to be appropriate adjacent to residential, and that was what it was set up for. And so along the way, we thought that this is by far the most appropriate zone that would address the Reeves' concerns and also keep the city protected. Thank you.
Further public comment?
Yep.
Ms. Motley.
Vicki Motley, 318 9th Street. Just clarification. Does the town have to maintain Logan Road where Twin Creeks comes in? Because if they don't have to maintain that section, why would they have to maintain Logan Road that adjoins the property that the Reeves own or Middle Burnt Fork. I mean, I don't understand that. If we're not maintaining Logan Road now, where the Twin Creeks entrance is,
you mean Middle Burnt Fork?
Or Middle Burnt Fork. I mean, why would we have to, or the other one, Creekside? I mean, are we responsible for maintaining part of Logan where Creekside enters?
We probably should be. We'll put it that way. There's some unanswered questions in code. We're not currently doing it.
Okay.
The county's being a good neighbor.
Okay.
We've had those conversations with the county road department. And Middle Burnt Fork's in the same position where it's on again, off again as to where Middle Burnt Fork runs through the city limits. Where it does run through city limits, yes, we should be responsible. But those sections are so short that the county has just, like we've said, they've been neighborly. And we do some trading with them on materials and that sort of thing as well, where they help us. So
okay. Then my next question is, are they going to access it through Twin Creeks?
Correct.
So we're not putting a new access onto Middle Burnt Fork. We're not putting a new access onto Logan Road.
Is that the assumption?
Is that right?
There's one access off of Logan Road right now.
And it's already there.
Or there's two of them that are already there.
Okay. That's my question. So.
Further public comment? Okay, motion on the floor is to approve annexation with the C2 interim designation. Any further council discussion before call for the vote? Okay. Council Member Vick?
Aye.
Council Member Michelson?
No.
Council Member Holcomb?
No.
Council Member Devlin?
No.
Okay, motion fails. Mr. Reeves does have an application for annexation in, so I suppose because the motion on the motion has failed to annex, I need direction to relay back to the Reeves as if this is a closed, we're not annexing you, and therefore not providing water and sewer services, or if this is a we're not annexing you because of these issues that need to be addressed. Can I get clarification, please?
For me, I think some homework still needs to be done in order to decide if annexing is a good idea. I mean, there's still issues, and I don't want to prevent you from having a business there or having a home, but we still need information. And going off of that, I love that you have good intentions. What if something happens in 3, 5, 10 years from now? We have to protect the future of Stevensville, not just the now of Stevensville. And I feel like we need some direction to be able to make an informed decision.
I agree.
Okay. Any further sentiments? Okay. I would request that council provide specific questions that need to be answered to the administration. If you could do so by Monday, that would be greatly appreciated. That way we can turn this back around and answer those questions for you in time for next Thursday's meeting. Okay. Thanks, you guys, for being here. You're welcome to disperse. In fact, we're going to take a 10-minute recess, get everybody a chance to get some fresh air, stretch their legs, and we'll reconvene at 7:20. All right, we'll reconvene the town council meeting for June 4th, 2020. Give everybody a quick second to get situated here. We are on unfinished business, item 10C, discussion decision, the interlocal agreement, and the building lease agreement between the town of Stevensville and the Stevensville Rural Fire District. I'll defer to the city attorney and Chief Motley.
Mayor?
Yes. Can you turn your microphone on, please?
Objective the consideration of this question based on the fact that this agenda item was decided on a 3-0 vote last July by a previous town council.
Can you turn your microphone on, please, sir? Thank you. Your motion is to object to the consideration of the item. Is that correct?
That is correct. I move this question based on the fact that this agenda item was decided on a 3-0 vote last July by the previous town council.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to object to the consideration of the item. Any further council discussion? Mr. Michelson.
Yes, I'd like to object to this, and I'd like to see it move forward the way it originally should have been done last July. The reason being is I've got the minutes of the meeting, the actual minutes. I have a letter here from the Rural Fire Board's attorney to Mr. Holmes here, basically stating that Mr. Motley and you were in agreement with what the agreement was last July. The only stipulation was it should have went to the attorney, and it should have been reviewed and then brought back and finalized. On 11-5, Mr. Owens charged us $104 for interlocal agreement. And on January 22nd, he charged us $72 for interlocal agreement. And I would think that we could push this forward without trying to change it. In fact, I don't think we can change it because it was already decided at the previous town council. Thank you.
Did the minutes reflect her, the attorney looking at it and approving it?
What's that?
Did the minutes reflect saying that our attorney would look at it and approve it or come back with questions or comments or?
No, it just stated that from their attorney to our attorney that.
I mean the minutes.
The minutes,
the
yes.
The minutes in November.
The minutes in November?
Or July.
July minutes? Yes, I could read those for you.
I believe they said that the attorney would review and.
Yes, he was supposed to just review it.
The items in yellow?
Correct.
Right. Did you review the items in yellow? Did you come back with comment on what those would be?
I did. I did do a legal review and spoke with everybody involved. I don't know.
Okay. So, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. But in these minutes, the lease agreement was already approved in July. It was the one in, it was the interlocal agreement that was in the green highlighted that we approved to make those changes upon approval by town attorney. But the lease was already approved then.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. Mr. Owens, go ahead.
Sorry.
No, no problem.
I was in
there. So the way I understood it, and this has been a big issue, and I have been in contact with the Rural Fire Department's attorney. In fact, I spoke with her a couple of times over the last couple of days. Monica transcribed the meeting. What it says is that this will be approved upon legal review. But what a legal review is, a review and then there's an opinion to follow advising what we picked up from that. And so at this point, a legal review has been done. There is advice on that legal review. I don't think the matter is closed, but that's, you know, that's within your discretion. And frankly, whatever I advise on, it's not on the table, but I mean, right now is whether or not to even entertain the discussion. But it is my opinion that it was subject to review and advisement.
Any further council discussion on objection to consideration?
Did you get those, his review?
What's that?
Did you get his review?
His? Mm-hmm. In writing?
Mm-hmm. No.
We don't know as though there was a written review, was there?
There wasn't, and I'm prepared to talk about that.
That's why we're here tonight.
Okay. I just want to make sure
We're here tonight partly because that legal review has been complete. He's held conversations. That's why the item's on the agenda and why I deferred to the fire chief and the city attorney to present the item before it was objected to. So the decision before you right now is whether or not to object to the item. I'd briefly call for public comment if there is any on the objection. Okay. With that, then we'll call for the vote on the objection. An aye vote objects, a no vote does not object. Mr. Michelson?
Aye.
Mr. Vick?
No.
Ms. Holcomb?
Aye.
And Ms. Devlin?
No.
Okay. There's a tie. Mayor votes no. We'll consider the item. With that, then, I will give the floor back to the city attorney and the fire chief to discuss their approach to the interlocal so far.
Thank you. I think it's pretty straightforward, and I think some of the issues that were identified have been, I'm not sure how much was spoke about this with Mr. West. What you have before you is an interlocal agreement as well as a lease agreement. And I think one of the biggest issues that was identified is these two agreements are moving concurrently together. They're completely separate agreements. You've got an interlocal agreement which dictates operation between the town and the local fire department. And separately, you've got a lease agreement. And it's just not advisable to push those together and make them contingent upon one another. For example, if something went awry at the lease, does that mean the interlocal agreement goes? And that's, I think that was possibly advised by my predecessor, Mr. West, but that is still the opinion on that issue. The other issue that was identified is you have a lease agreement that was before you where the city and town, or the town has leased the whole property, and in return they're leasing it back. I guess the best analogy, it doesn't make sense, it's unadvisable. I would analogize this to you renting a home to a renter, your home, and then paying for a room. Now, there may be reason behind that, but I don't know, but that was another issue that we identified as being unadvisable. I heard a lot of talk over the last year about the status of the property and the land, and I reviewed this information. I think that there is a big argument as to what the intent was when this contract was made, but reviewing it legally, the town owns the land that was contracted for, and the town owns the building. Just to be clear on that issue. I understand there is an underlying intent, but I think that is what I've discussed with the rural fire department in the prior meeting. But it's not in the contract, the original contract. The other issue, and the last issue before I hand it over, is I was of the understanding that there were some issues in our local agreement that, speaking with Mr. Motley today, I don't believe that is. There is any issues, but I would pass it to him concerning those issues. And I think Mr. Motley also has some recommendation concerning the lease agreement.
So, regarding the interlocal agreement, the interlocal portion of the interlocal agreement, if you will, is an operational procedural document that does spell out how the two entities will cooperate and work together and have been doing that for a number of years, a long term. And both departments wish to continue that cooperative effort to provide service to the community and the district together. I mean, that's the way the system works. That's the way service is provided. I don't think there's a citizen out there that when they dial 911, they expect somebody to show up and to help them out. And that's what we are in. We, the district and the town fire department, that's what we're here to do. So the interlocal operational piece of this, I have no concerns, questions, or qualms about that. After speaking with Scott and the whole thing about the two different, you know, you have a lease agreement and you have an operational agreement being two separate things, I would agree with that. And I would agree with that, yeah, they need to be separated off so one doesn't affect the other, so we can continue to provide service. I think there's a very easy resolution to the whole thing, off the building thing. Yeah, we can lease it, we can lease part of it or whatever, or maybe we just cost share the maintenance and the insurance on it and we utilize it to provide fire service to the community. The building has been more than paid for. It doesn't cost anybody anything to have it other than the maintenance, the upkeep, and the insurance on it. That may be a resolution to the whole lease obligation, whatever piece of the intent that wasn't written into the contract, that might be resolved to that. So I guess that would be open to discussion. Those are my feelings on it. Yes, when it came through in July and the council was going to table it and put it aside, we stood up, we being myself and the district board member that were in attendance at the meeting, said, no, we need to take action on this. This thing needs to be removed. And yeah, I agree with the interlocal operational piece of all that. No issues with that. I just think that would be, you know, to separate the two makes perfect sense to me. I mean, if anybody has other properties, a landlord or anything like that, you can see the logic of why would I rent my building back from myself? I don't understand that part of it. But anyway, it's your guys' decision. As far as a document that's going to continue the joint cooperative effort of providing service, emergency response to the community, I think you have that paperwork in front of you in the form of the interlocal agreement. And as far as the land lease use part of it, I think that could be a separate document that would be easily handled and spelled out and taken care of. So I guess with that, I would take questions or whatever.
And to build on that, I mean, I think one of the big issues that we're talking about is procedure, right? What you stated is you made a decision on this. You can't go back on that. What I want to stress is it was contingent on a legal review. Now, you can take the advice or leave it. This decision is still up to you what you want to do, but nothing prevents you from making a decision to alter it based on the advice that has been given tonight. That's
Mr. Michelson.
So you're bringing this back before the council, and may I ask what changes you're not happy with or what you want changed? Because it's kind of obvious that you didn't like what you wanted here, Jeff, after 9 months. We're looking at the minutes here last summer. You wanted to push this forward in a big way to get it done. Now, all of a sudden, I don't hear that from you.
So I want the interlocal agreement to be passed. I wanted it to be adopted in July.
Right, of last year.
Right, and so the council said, okay, great, we'll go for this per legal review. Legal review has come back and said, you really should separate the documents. Okay, fine. It's your guys' decision. Either you take the advice from your council or you do not.
So you want the council to separate one and not the other?
I don't think there is a one or the other. There's only one thing to separate off. That would be the lease from the interlocal agreement.
And I think, Scott, you have done an illegal analysis and explained some of that tonight. And so I think that what we're asking council to give direction on is, do you want to accept the legal review that Scott has done? If that's the case, we'll make those modifications and send a signed document over to the district. Or do you want to leave the interlocal agreement alone and ignore the advice of legal counsel? That's the question before you, essentially. And it doesn't necessarily take a motion or a vote. We just need a head nod to say, yes, we're okay with Scott's legal review. Ms. Holcomb?
It was never an issue. I mean, back in July, we were saying separate the two. It was a lease and it was an interlocal agreement, but I haven't seen anything from the attorney. I would like to see what he, instead of verbaling, I would like to see what his recommendations are.
If you want something written, I can certainly do that, but I'm putting my opinion on the record right now. It's the same thing. If you want me to put it in a memo, I can do that.
Well, and like I said, in July, we didn't have a problem with separating the two. That's why one was approved with the yellow highlighted areas with the lease, and the other one was the green areas in the interlocal agreement. So I don't think that was ever an issue. The issue was just cleaning it up and approve, and we were approving what the little bits were in, and we said, yeah, we're approving this. We just like to keep these in here and these in here, just clean it up a little bit, and then all of a sudden it went away again. So,
Mr. Michelson.
I agree with Mrs. Holcomb. When we gave you a direction last summer, the minutes, that was to exchange the highlighted areas in both. And now your opinion is to separate them out. That's not what the council directed you to do.
So can we just hear from Roll? I mean, from the Roll Fire, for someone from the Roll Fire Department to see what their opinion is?
Real quick, let's recap a couple of things. Yes, you're correct that at the meeting the documents were separated. Mm-hmm. Both were sent to the attorney for legal review. That review is complete, and Scott's rendered that to you this evening verbally. And so I just want to clarify that he's done that legal review. There were some concerns that he's expressed in the document, and so that, like, again, like I stated, that's what we're asking your blessing on. We didn't want to make changes to a document without your blessing, because I think we all know how that would go. So to that, I just wanted to clarify, we understand that when you considered this in July, it was two documents. Mr. Vick, you did have your hand up, and I want to make sure we didn't skip over you.
No, I'm good. I think my question's been answered about four times so far.
Okay. Does council want to entertain public comment? Although there's no motion on the floor. Or do you want to hear from representatives of the district?
I'd like to hear from representatives of the district.
Okay, Rural Fire District, pick your rep and make your speech.
Thank you. Bill Anderson, Stevensville Rural Fire District trustee. A couple things I want to clarify. Talking to our council today, we talked to Scott. In the beginning, when we had an interlocal prior to us pulling the lease out of the interlocal, it was one document, had lease, had interlocal, had all that intertwined. We made the decision to make an operational document out of the interlocal, pull the lease out, make a lease document. That's why both of those documents kind of ended up stacked on top of each other. She kind of looks at that as semantics. What I would say is there are two documents. There's going to be a lease. There's going to be an interlocal. When we need to deal with something in an interlocal, we'll deal with the interlocal document. And in the future, when that document comes forward, it won't come forward with the lease stapled to it. The lease is in another file in another spot in the office. They are two separate documents. That's what we asked for, the highlighted sections of each document to refer. And it really comes down to that our stake in the game, I guess. We don't argue. A couple times I've heard them say, well, Rural Farmer, you don't own that building. Well, technically, no. The town owns the building. The lease, or the deed, all of that is the town's. What we are trying to hang on to is our investment in the building and our right to be in that building. The intent of the 2000 document that came forward, I think the intent's clearly spelled out. The attorney, we can all read that. Maybe we get our own. Our attorney thinks it's clearly spelled out. We've got about $100,000 invested in the building. Like in the initial documents when it was drawn up, would have control of all of 208 Buck Street. That's why it's a separate address. The leasing back, there's a lot of things in government and all this that don't always make sense. I guarantee you, I've heard it being done in other places, but we have control over that. We're happy to lease back half. When the town got a ladder truck and didn't have a place to park it, they came to us and said, would you move some of your equipment out and allow us to park equipment on that side? We said, yeah. We made room for our equipment outside of that building. And we're willing to do that now. We're willing to work just like Jeff is willing to work with us. The intent of this document is to protect that right to be there, to inhabit that portion of the building. It's not ownership. We understand that. It's much similar to an airport lease. You sign a long-term airport lease that gives the gentleman a right to build a building on that. Even has a right to take it off when the lease is over. We recognize that we're probably not going to be lifting the building and taking it off if things go different ways. So, but that is, there are two separate documents. In the future, when they come before council or being considered to review, they'll be reviewed as individual documents. So if there's any question from council or anything on that.
Thank you, sir.
So I would encourage you to look at those, the changes that we have in there. I haven't heard any major objection or any objection really to the term of the lease, the amount, any of that. So I just encourage you to push it forward. I did provide corrected documents. We incorporated in the green and the yellow highlighted areas, and they were brought to you if we choose to make that decision, sign the documents, and move this one along. So, thank you.
Okay.
And the two attorneys discussed this, and everybody is with the, because that's what we were talking about, is the green highlighted and the yellow highlighted. I was okay with it in July. We just needed the attorney to say, okay, yes, let's move on.
Well, I think one of the bigger issues, I think it's pretty clear right now that these are two separate documents, and that was one of the big concerns.
Mm-hmm.
And realizing that conversation was contempt before these are being passed together. I think it's clear right now that the issue is resolved.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to accept the interlocal agreement with the legal review provided.
Okay, is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Vick, seconded by Ms. Devlin, to accept the interlocal agreement with the legal review that's been provided. Council discussion?
Are we doing both?
Right now it's the interlocal. Any further discussion from council? Mr. Michelson?
So what are you making a motion on?
Separate documents. To deal with the two documents separate.
Mr. Vick's motion is to approve the interlocal agreement with the legal review.
With his review?
Correct. I think Mr. Vick's intent is to consider the documents separately, as we've discussed. So right now you're considering approval of the interlocal. Any further council discussion? Public comment? Okay, hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Devlin?
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb?
Aye.
Councilmember Michelson?
Aye.
Councilmember Vick?
Aye.
Okay, motion passes. Do you care to address the lease?
Everybody was in agreement. Yeah. So I make the motion that we agree on the lease agreement between the town of Stevensville and the Stevensville Rural Fire District.
Second.
Okay. Motion by Ms. Holcomb and seconded by Mr. Vick is to accept the lease agreement between Stevensville Rural Fire District and the town of Stevensville. Council discussion. Public comment. Chief Motley.
So, can we be refreshed as to the terms, the length, the amount, square footage, price, all those fun things, or is we just kind of go forward?
Well, can't we just make it up?
Well, yeah, you sure can. That's not what I mean, but I'm thinking maybe we should cover that as to what you guys are really working on or accepting.
I think
that makes any sense.
They're accepting the lease agreement that's been reviewed by legal, correct, Scott?
Right. So,
can you summarize what that was?
The actual terms, you want me to go through the contract or the lease, I'm sorry.
Payment and term, that sort of thing with the lease. What is the encapsulate for us, what is the lease agreement that the town council is approving tonight based on your legal review?
Well, I guess it, just generally, and what I've already stated right now, there is an agreement to lease the entire building over to the Rural Fire Department. And then conversely, the Rural Fire Department is going to lease a part of that building back to the town. I'm not sure without looking at the...
The one that's in here?
I could review what's proposed. I've got it all written here.
Okay.
In the hands of the council.
As described in the 2000 agreement, that all of 208 Buck Street is leased at $5,000 a year. What we would agree to do then is lease back the square footage, just divide it out simply into the square footage numbers for the portion the town will occupy. They would have that, and we would pay the portion of ours. But the 2000 interlocal had it spelled out as $5,000 a year. It comes out to $416, $500 per annum. I apologize. I'm not ready for this, but I thought we had it spelled out in the monthly side of it. But $5,000 a year, which we are more than willing to pay $5,000. As a one-time or do it as a monthly agreement. Does that answer the question?
So I guess my question back would then be, How much square footage are you willing to lease back to the town?
Half the.
So are we going to divide that building? Because it doesn't divide half. It doesn't divide either.
No, we.
And so if we, if the town leases back the north side of that bay, or the north two bays of that building, I have no problem with that. If we are on the south side, we don't have enough room to operate our doors to get in and out of the engine that would be in the back end of that lease piece. And because the ambulance would be in front of it, because it runs out way more often than that type one does. So, I mean, there are some things on that part that we need to kind of have figured out before we carte blanche give away the building. My thoughts.
Ms. Devlin.
Can somebody explain to me how we own a building and then we have a lease agreement to lease part of that building out, and then they so generously are willing to lease part of that back to us?
In the documents we gave you when we met with you,
yeah,
it shows in the 2000 agreement that we traded land and a building.
Sure.
Okay. Land and a building for sure. That, plus about $50,000 worth of cash, a loan that we got from the town, paid back at an interest rate, with an interest rate attached. Much like an airport lease, we built the building on that piece of property. So we have, and in the interlocal that was agreed with and signed by the council, the fire board, it agreed that we had control over that portion of, or that building, 208 Buck Street.
Mm-hmm.
We still have control of that building, as we revealed, but we're more than happy to allow some, allow town to occupy some of it if they need to. So
sure, but isn't there a better way to have an agreement than to lease us back our own building?
What's wrong with leasing back our own building?
Why would we pay for our building twice?
Well, you're not paying for your building twice because you're not going to pay us any money for it. We're just not going to pay you as much as we would have for the $5,000.
So why don't we just say that?
We could, but we're not going to give up control of that building. That's why, if right now, if we just say we have a lease, we'd be giving up control eventually. Say down the road, town decides they don't need it, we decide we do need it, rather than a dump truck or a backhoe being parked in the area, we might want to use it for rural fire district like it was intended. So it's a building that we built on your land with your approval,
right,
and an agreement in 2000 that a council signed and,
sure,
and a rural fire district signed and agreed
for a building that's been paid for, though
we paid for,
and this was 20 years ago. This is,
yes,
an agreement 20 years ago. The building is paid for.
Yes.
So I'm still not understanding why we would pay twice for a building. There's got to be a better way. Well,
you're not. You're.
Then why do we put in there that you're going to pay us back half? Or you're going to lease back to us half of our building?
We're going to let you occupy that half. What that will do is will relieve us of the responsibility to pay for that portion of the building in the time that you occupy it. So we're just going to waive off on us paying rent on that portion, or us paying the lease payment on that portion of the building.
I'm just thinking there might be a better way to word that.
Yeah, so the district's intent is to retain control of all of the square footage,
mm-hmm,
and let us use half of the facility, thereby essentially reducing the rent they would, or the lease that they would pay.
Sure.
I think that their concern in their approaching this is that if we wrote a lease that said that we will lease you half of the square footage of the building,
mm-hmm,
for, in this case, $2,500 a year, that they'd be relinquishing control over the half of the space that we occupy.
Right. But it's my understanding that our equipment doesn't fit properly in the area that we have, but it does in the area that you have. Am I correct in that statement? So if we start saying, well, this part's yours and that part's mine, and you can use this when we say it's okay, but you can't, then we're not servicing the town.
We are always going to service the town.
Then why can't we word something like that says that, rather than this is ours and this is ours, and we want to maintain control of this?
Because we built it, and that's all we're asking for is that control. We're more than willing to work with the town. We have their equipment's in that spot right, mm-hmm, now, where it wants to be. We can certainly talk about that. When they bought a ladder truck without having a spot to park it, who gave up space?
Mm-hmm.
We did. open an argument there. So
I'm not disagreeing with the lease. I'm agreeing with how this it sounds and how this is worded and how it's playing out.
Yeah, I understand.
That's my question.
It's just things might not always sound like I said.
But we're in the year 2020.
I know that, and you can lease back property. I mean, if I had, you know, 1,000 acres and leased it for that and said, you know what, even though you're in control of 1,000 acres, I want 100 over here, I'll just take off part of your lease without redrawing, you know, I ain't giving up, you know, control. So
you can.
There's some semantics to it.
Mr. Beck?
Hopefully I might be able to clarify this a little bit. So the reason why there has to be a lease in there to lease it back, lease that area back to us, kind of falls under something similar to like a landlord type law. Like in my case, I rent from Cardinal Properties. If I wanted, they can't just come into my house and use a set of property and say, hey, you can have $500 off your bill every month. There has to be something in writing for them to say, hey, you're occupying this space and you, and they are crediting me whatever off my bill. That's really what this lease is kind of saying. It's like, yes, you're leasing the building to us, and we're going to lease this back to you at a credit to reduce the amount. And that's really all it's saying. It's pretty much.
But we get to put our stuff in it.
Right, we do get to put our stuff in it.
Cardinal doesn't put their stuff in your house.
They try.
Like,
Brad Pullman, I'm another board member on the Rural Fire. I happen to be a fireman back when this building was built. To kind of give you maybe help with your question on why we're wanting to do it the way that it's written in this current document, the brick building to the south of the city hall is using the block building. Across the alley from that to the east used to be City Hall, and they owned that lot behind it. And when we started the Rural Fire District, we have several fire companies. We have the Burnt Fork Fire Company, the Aetna Fire Company, the Westside Fire Company, and the Sunset Bench Fire Company. In order for us to provide fire protection to our district, and the way we're rated for your homeowner, our district homeowner's insurance has to do with having that Burnt Fork Fire Company. When we grew out of that building, that building was built on city property by the Rural Fire District, and that was part of the trade to build the new building. We grew out of that building, as we're all growing out of the one we're in now and discussing. So that was the same way, that was handled the same way as where we're handling the new building. Okay, it'd be beneficial for both departments and both citizens and non-citizens of Stevensville if we kept that Burnt Fork Fire Company in town. The most feasible way to do that would be to add on to the existing town hall. So we bought property that was belonging to the fourplex across Buck Street, and that's what's now a current parking lot. We donated that property plus a $40,000 value of the block building that was on the city's property, and then we borrowed $50,000 through CDBG and paid interest to add on to the city hall. We need, as a fire district, to maintain Burnt Fork Fire Company for our clients, our taxpayers. And it takes a little time to build another hall somewhere. So the reason we want this lease and control of these two bays is we need that to do our job as a Rural Fire District. And if we lose control of that, we have to replace it. Well, that takes a little bit of time. So we want a 5-year lease on this. We may grow to where we need that bay and we have to work it out with the city. Hey, we're gonna have to find something else to do with that ladder truck because we need to move two more pieces of apparatus in that building that we pay for to build. So that's what we're concerned as a board member, as board for our fire company, for our Rural Fire District, is we have to maintain that for fire company, which is now housed in these two bays. Now we can do that and meet our insurance rating and only use half of it, but that may not be the case in the next 5 years or the next 10 years. And we just need some time. If we both grow as Stevensville City and Stevensville Rural, and both of those bays need to belong to the city for their fire protection, we just need some time to be able to find a new location for the Burnt Fork Fire Company and build a new station. But in the meantime, we can both get along and add a savings to our taxpayers in this agreement.
but by only leasing half of the bays from you and not leasing all of the bays and then leasing you back two bays, we feel that we're jeopardizing our ability to provide fire protection for the Burnt Fork Fire Company when we only have those two bays. Does that help you understand that?
It's not that I don't understand. I had a question.
Okay.
And I'm saying that I think there's a better way to do it. My understanding is that when you're rated for insurance, it looks at a whole unit, not just your unit or the town's unit. They look at that as one. So having you and the town in one space doesn't benefit anybody anymore.
That's a little bit incorrect because that space that we have, it's not just in benefiting the town. It's in benefiting the rural district that's outlying the town. And we need that space to provide protection for when the towns quit, when the town borders, when you cross the town city limits, the perimeter of Stevensville, that's rural fire district. Mm-hmm. And it's provided protection from the Burnt Fork Fire Company. In other words, if we didn't have those two bays, that place would be rated based on our nearest stations, which would be Aetna, Westside. It takes a lot more time to get there from here than it does to get there from a station in town.
And they don't include the town of Stevensville's fire department in that rating?
Somewhat, but we have to have it in order to, we have to have that fire company in order to be a partner with you. In other words, we have to be a neighboring party. It has to do with distances. In other words, by our agreement with the city and the rural fire, you gain all the mutual aid we get from 3 Mile, Florence, and Victor. If we weren't agreed to work as a whole, those districts are too far away from the town of Stevensville to benefit from that mutual aid. So distance has a lot to do with it and where the fire halls are. That's why the big change in Hamilton used to be the rule in Hamilton was provided by the city, Hamilton City Fire. Well, the outskirts of their district were getting pretty high insurance ratings because of this. And so now they're building new satellite stations. We were fortunate enough in Stevensville to have somebody sharp enough back in the beginning to go, hey, we need fire companies, and we need them several miles away from town to provide for everybody. And it's worked very well. So the interest that we're trying to protect in having both bays is that Burnt Fork Fire Company and what it provides to the rural district, the perimeter of town. And if we grow to the point where that doesn't work, that's fine. But we need time to be able to build a new hall within the perimeter, outside perimeter of town, to take up what that provides us now. So if we lose half that bay by only leasing half of it from you, then, we've lost half of what we gained when we built the building in the first place because we were grown out of the bay we had next door.
But I don't see a prohibition that if that were the case, that the town would, if you came back to the town and said, look, we need to lease back those two other bays that you're occupying, that wouldn't happen. I think that everyone's demonstrated here that the interest of fire protection for the entire community is what we're after. And so I don't see any reason why if that lease agreement came back to us and they said, we weren't already leasing it from you, that we wouldn't say, okay, well, let's make it work.
I guess all I can say to that is the reason we have some concern is because we've been discussing this for almost 2.5 years.
And I think that this very issue is part of that reason, is that there's some disagreement as to how this is worded.
That argument can go both ways, Brandon. We can simply say to you, yeah, if you need it, we're giving it to you. So why not lease it to us? Why not maintain that lease that we've had since 2000 on that property? That's all we're doing is asking to maintain what we have.
But you haven't. That lease was superseded by an interlocal in 2017 when the Cruz administration stopped renting it to you.
No, the reason they stopped renting is because they moved the ladder truck in. They asked us to move the ladder truck in and they would waive the rent. The 2000, your opinion of that being superseded, our council says that's not true.
Scott, do you have an opinion on this?
Which part?
Well, the supersede or the lease back or the lease, do you have an opinion on that?
I'm pretty sure.
I can't.
Your mic's off. Sorry
about that. And a lot of these issues, well, I think we're dealt with Brian while he was still here. And I think that
misquote this here, but is the question as to whether or not one of these documents has expired, or...
That wasn't my question.
Okay.
I think Jamie's question directly is it advisable that we do the lease in the fashion that the district is describing?
Well, and that's, I mean, that's the question. I think the lease agreement right now is it sitting? I bring the issue up because I think there's other operational concerns about leasing the entire dock, the entire building. And I think that's more in the realm of what Chief Motley has addressed. And I think he's getting ready to talk about it again. I'm not sure. It's an operational issue. But right now, the concern is that we're leasing the entire building and then we're leasing it back. And if there are concerns with how it operates and concerns for our department, that's not my piece to speak on. Mm-hmm. It seems flawed.
Thank you.
So, this is a 5-year term on this agreement that we're looking at tonight as presented, correct? I think the other piece that's important that we put into this agreement is that in 2000, it was controlled by the district for the joint cooperative effort of both fire departments. That verbiage has been left out of this document, but it needs to be in there. Again, that just goes to solidify back to the district's concerns. Hey, we need a fire hall. We don't need to be storing whatever in those bays that were built for more fire response to the community. So I think that verbiage needs to be put back in there. If you guys want to lease the whole thing, lease back, I have no problem with that. Great. But I do know that the way the apparatus is situated in that building today best fits the apparatus that's in that building today. And I do believe, though, that if the town comes to the district 2 years or whatever, says, hey, we need all the bays, because we're growing, we need all the bays, well, we're going to have the same argument. Well, we need time to vacate. Well, okay, but how does that piece look, and how does that all go down? We have a 5-year agreement that we're talking about tonight. I think that in 5 years, we're going to look differently as to what the district's needs are, what the town's needs are. Yeah, I would think that we could agree on that in 5 years. This may look totally different. I think I would agree there are maybe some wording, some verbiage things that could be changed around that a little bit. But the gist of the whole thing is we have 4 bays over there that are occupied by 4 different pieces of equipment that fit the way that they're parked now. And if we change around who gets what, whatever, then that could change that. We give control of all 4 bays to the district. I don't have a problem with that. We lease back too. But that's also the only way we get into our fire hall is through that one door. So, I get it. We're all good friends now.
Sure.
But I've seen it where, man, one person changes and the whole thing changes, and now we have a can of worms going on. Frenchtown's an example. Polson's an example. Well, heck, Stevensville was an example when Fremont was part of Stevensville. It happens. I just think the town needs to take care of the town. We need to take care of the whole community also. And I think that we have a way that we can do that as long as you, the council, are satisfied with the verbiage to the document that you're agreeing to. Legal counsel has raised a couple points. Do you guys need to make a move?
Can you confirm what you just said? So the door to get into the fire hall.
Yes, it's on the north.
Is
bays.
Owned by.
Well, it's on the north.
Owned by
of
rural.
That, of that building.
Control.
So.
It's in the part you're leasing back. There's two doors. There's two man doors. There's one in the part we would be leasing back to you, and there's mm-hmm. one on our side.
Can you clarify what you were saying?
So if we lease back the 2 north bays of that building, then that main door coming in would be on the 2 north bays. There's another door, man door, to the south that would be in the south 2 bays. So who has control of what? I would really like to believe that will never come down to an issue, but, there are things that happen. Who controls the key to that door to get you into the fire hall? We do not get into the the other four bays of the fire hall without going through the building that they built. I mean, those two north bays are the access to the rest of the fire hall. So those two north bays are pretty important to the town. Mm-hmm. So if the agreement is great, fine. You guys have the two north bays, we'll take the two south bays, we'll lease back, we trade dollars, it's all good. Great. And I don't think that the firemen would argue that the way the apparatus is situated over those bays today makes the best operational sense of how those four bays in that building are utilized. We have a heavy rescue on the south bay, backed up by a type 6 grassland and engine, and then we have the ambulance, light rescue ambulance in the front bay right in the door, so it's quick, easy access, first two out. And that's backed up by a type 1 apparatus that we hope to get moved next door very soon. So that's how we're situated, and also in that one bay there's a divot, so you can get down to the lower level to get into the other bay, so that takes up floor space also. So yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem leasing back, leasing to whatever, but I really think the town should have use of those two north bays.
Mr. Michelson.
So I guess my issue is, we've been working on this thing for a year and a half. Stacy Barker and I had met with the Rural Fire Board in January of last year. We went to two COW meetings. We met with Jeff, Robin and I did up in his office. And everything was a go. We went to the meeting last July. All we asked was the highlighted areas to be changed. And here we are almost a year later, and we're still hashing it out. I don't understand why council's decision has to be rearranged and redid. No offense to you, Scott, but because your opinion is a little different. And Brian, by the way, never did get a chance to review this. It was an interchangeable thing. Brian had left and you had came aboard. Exactly. In fact, you were at the meeting when we had directed the attorney to make some changes, to review the changes and bring them back.
And I think that is, yeah, I think you're right. I think that's where everyone else is coming on.
So Brian never did take a look at these.
Yeah, I think he, from what I understand, he rendered some sort of opinion, and I'm not sure what that was. I think one of the original terms of the agreement was there was an extended lease, like 100 years.
That was never so.
I don't know. There was some.
It was never. Our attorney said you questioned the 99 lease. That was never so.
Okay.
Also, everything prior to this, and Brian might have interviewed or had opinions on other interlocals, but never on the lease document. So that was, I mean, when this was presented to do it this way, it was when you were first, the same meeting that you were hired. I was going to say blessed, but hired. So, one thing that is in the interlocal, and I understand Chief Motley's concerns. We share those. We want his equipment to come out. That ambulance is crucial to services in our town. His engine behind it when it happens, our rescue to go out. It says, whereas the new space shall be under control of the district, and the district shall determine what equipment the district and town may be stored within. And we didn't leave town out on that. We know that town's equipment needs to be in there, and right now that's kind of the way it is. As things change, there may be a time when town comes to us also and says, you know what, we're entertaining putting a new piece of equipment in. And we are, much like we've done in the last several years, is looking at, we're finishing up our third new station, not new station, replacement station. And I think in the future, as we get, we've got about probably 4 or 5 years to pay on this one station, we'll probably be entertaining another. And that might be then to say, okay, we're going to pull something out by Iron Cap, and that'll relieve the load in here. But council did make a decision on it. The highlighted areas, it's before you. I don't think that, I mean, the fire chief just said, doesn't have any problem. I agree with him with his equipment. You know, right now needs to be, when he opens up that bay and can move an engine down, that might be an opportunity if we choose to say, can we move the rescue over one and move the ambulance over so it goes out. It can go out the front just the same. I'm not sure that's any benefit to us to move it over. So
That's a good talk.
Mr. Vick.
I'll make the motion to approve the lease.
It's already been motioned. So I'm calling for the...
Call for division of the house.
Can I ask one question?
Let's let him speak and we'll call for the rest of the public comment and then we'll go for vote.
I'm sorry, Brian.
It's fine.
The idea on this was that what you're approving is that, just to make sure I'm clear on it, is the revisions that we put forward, the revised documents that I gave you guys all copies of, all that. And that's one reason it probably wasn't, I'm not sure the attorney was, I think he saw the lease, so there was some confusion there, but that's not probably on his head. It's probably, you know, just because that documents are now in your hand, so.
It would be wonderful if someone would share those documents with the clerk's office so that we have official copies in place. Yeah.
With what?
It would be great if we could get official copies of those documents, because right now the clerk's office and the mayor's office don't have those, and neither does the fire chief. So at some point, oh, looks like you came prepared. Okay. With that, is there any other public comment on the lease agreement? Okay, with that, if there's no public comment, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Holcomb.
Aye.
Councilmember Vick.
Aye.
Councilmember Michelson.
Aye.
Councilmember Devlin.
Aye.
Okay, motion passes unanimously.
Thank you very much.
All right. Next item of business is new business item C, discussion decision contract award for managed IT services to First Call Computer Solutions. The last time the council considered this item, it was requested that it go back out for RFP. That was done, and the contract award is before you tonight.
Were these open without council, the bids?
They were emailed to us, and we only received the one proposal. We didn't request sealed bids. It wasn't a requirement. Mr. Michelson?
Mayor Dewey, I emailed you on March 25th, and I stated I noticed you advertised for IT services for the town of Stephenville, which closes this Friday, the 27th. May I ask you who advertised it besides the bidder at Star? Also, I did not find it in the 318 Stars. Did you not advertise in any other paper? Did you just advertise in 1 week in the paper? Well, I did your research, and you did, in fact, only advertise for 1 week, and you didn't open the bid before the council. When's that going to start happening?
It's not a requirement that type of bid be opened before the council.
Where does it say that it's not part of the requirement?
Where does it say it is?
Okay. Well, I would like you to go back and re-advertise it to three different newspapers and for 2 weeks. In fact, Council Member Devlin asked me to do that in an email a while back, to do the very same thing. I think we should give other places a chance besides this First Call. In fact, I asked you for an itemized, which you did give to me, thank you. And we get computer services for First Call for the first 5 months of this year, and it's costed us $15,783. 406 computer for 3 months last year charged us $593. And then we had Sonic Wall, which is $345. But the kicker was the main one was Top Down Computer Consultants, and they did services to us from 227 of 15 to 426 of 19 for 4 years. It charges $25,790. So my question would be, why weren't these given a chance to be advertised and be part of it? Because they're definitely a lot cheaper than what we're paying now.
I think the reason that Top Down probably did not rebid on the RFP, which we've already advertised twice, was because I don't think that they can provide the same level of service that we're asking for in the RFP. Top Down provided us with services on a basis where we called them with an issue, and then they put us on a schedule, and they eventually came. And I'm not speaking derogatorily of the organization, because it did fit our needs for a period of time. But they would come, they would fix the problem, and then they'd send us a bill for it. And that's what you see there. In fact, I think that the 406 computer bill that you rattled off was, in fact, just one issue that he addressed, and that was on a specific computer. We invested $500 into resolving one issue. And so that's why we made the decision, or the administration at least, was an advocate for managed IT services, where we pay a flat fee every month throughout a period of time, rather than on demand and having someone eventually fix it. There were no help desk services with previous vendors, meaning that during regular business hours, if a clerk had a printer issue, they couldn't at that time call a phone number and speak to a technician and have the problem resolved within 10 minutes. Instead, it was a phone call to the vendor. The vendor would get us on the schedule, and then they'd come look at it. So it wasn't as efficient of a process. And those vendors also did not supply us with antivirus software. So you'll see the SonicWall bill, the iBackup bill, all those other bills. We're no longer paying, because they provide that service with the fee that we pay every month. The ultimate goal is that at some point our machines and our infrastructure for information technology runs so efficiently and has fewer issues than it does today, so that perhaps we don't need to pay for as much IT support as we're getting now, meaning there are lower packages we could go for with First Call, where perhaps help desk isn't included, and that when we can call help desk as much as we want right now, but maybe we scale that back and we say that we'll only pay for help desk when we use it. Right now, we use it quite frequently. There's several calls a week that go into them because of the quirks and the issues we're having. They're also helping us with managing the infrastructure, getting it up to speed. When they were first onboarded back in December, we still had machines in our system running Windows XP, which was a giant security risk. And for example, at the well field, the computer that operates the wells, was the only thing between that computer and the World Wide Web was the CenturyLink router that we leased from them to protect that machine, and that wasn't sufficient. I guess to speak directly to some of the points you've made, at the time we aggressively or we didn't advertise for 2 weeks in the paper. Primarily because we wanted to get the advertising turned around and get it right back on the next agenda. We wanted it to come before council right away. Then COVID-19 hit. I know that Mr. Underwood spoke with at least one other vendor who was interested in bidding on the RFP, and an RFP was, or excuse me, a bid was never received from that organization. So, that's some of the rationale behind what the decisions that have been made. If it's council's direction to go forward and re-advertise this, we have the documentation and we can do that. But in the interim, we're going to continue on the month-to-month basis that we have, so that we can keep those services in place, because we can't afford not to have those services in place right now. Mr. Michelson.
Yes, I would like you to re-advertise this the way it is in our section 2-399, advertising. And I'd like to see you put it in three more newspapers, Hamilton, Missoula, and ours, for 2 weeks. And I'd also like the bids come back and the bids to be open in front of the council for our resolution, which is contracts. Bids for contracts shall be open by the clerk in the presence of the council while the council is in actual session at a regular, adjourned, or special meeting. After bids that have been opened, the contract shall be let or awarded by the council, the award shall be made to the lowest possible bidder. The council may postpone action as any such contract until the next regular meeting after the bids are received, or may reject any or all bids to re-advertise MCA 754302. I think we need to start following this again to the letter. I noticed you guys did that on the airport bids last fall, You brought it before the council. You guys opened them. It was very professional. It was very well done. I'd like to see that come back again, because a lot of contracts that are coming through here are just approve this contract, like Mr. Kellogg later on tonight, the HDR one. That was done correct. It was put in newspapers. It was done in 2 weeks. But the only problem was it wasn't open before the council. Should have been.
So the section you're reading out of municipal code is prefaced with section 2-398, which starts off the municipal code regarding contracts and purchases. And what it states is, except as provided in MCA, and it cites a number of codes, all contracts of the municipality for the purchase of any automobile, truck or other vehicle, road machinery, other machinery, apparatus, appliances, equipment, or materials or supplies for construction, repair, or maintenance in excess of $80,000 must be let to the lowest responsible bidder after the advertisement for bids. And then it leads you into the advertisement for bids. So those are the specific pieces that when the town is seeking seeking bids for anything, those are the pieces that we follow. You know, so if we're looking for machinery, apparatus, appliances for construction, repair, and maintenance in excess of $80,000, that's when we're going to refer to this code. But outside of that, and to speak to, I realize we'll get there, but the HDR is not a bid. That's a proposal. There's no dollar amount whatsoever in that document. So that isn't even something we needed to open in front of council. The things we open in front of council are described in section 2-398. That's the way it's always been. We went back and verified to make sure that there wasn't an ill precedent set. And so, I mean, IT services, as Mr. Owens has stated in his legal opinion on this issue, are exempt from the bidding requirements in state law and the bidding requirements in Division 3 of the code. Mr. Michelson, you can't say no, because we have an attorney at the end of the table who's saying yes, and he's qualified to read and interpret the law. Ms. Holcomb.
I would like to speak to that, because when Brian West would ever make an opinion, that's what you would always tell us, it's just an opinion. Now Mr. Owens makes a comment, it's a fact. So why the difference? I don't understand that. I just don't understand why all of a sudden everything has changed. But according to the town of Stevensville purchasing policy, it says other professional services, as per the town's policy, any contract must be approved in advance by town council. And that doesn't say cars, or it says in regards to contracting for other professional services, including non-construction services.
And there's more language that follows that, Ms. Holcomb. I guess I would like to... The suggestion that's been put on the table by Mr. Michelson is to re-advertise for 2 weeks in 3 different papers. I'd like to know if that's the direction of the rest of the council. Mr. Michelson can't make that direction on his own, but the entire council needs to agree to incurring that expense first. We advertised for these services in May of 2019, and then again this spring.
I would like to see it re-ran, because unfortunately, all the other services we've had, I never had problems. I never had junk mail. I didn't have spam. We get this one, I've had more junk mail than I've ever had. I've had spams more than I ever have. So I don't know what this company is doing, because I've had more junk mail than I've ever had in any other service.
None of the services, IT services that we've ever paid for have ever dealt with our email system. That's through Microsoft.
Well, they never had any junk mail.
They'll assist us set it up on our machines, but they don't actually manage the server. Microsoft does that for us.
Okay.
Ms. Devlin?
So I'm going to say yes. Let's go ahead and do that. We can go back and forth all night. It's 8:30.
Mr. Vick.
My only thing, and I'm going to say no to pushing out another RFP, and the reason why is because my fear is, what if First Call is yet again the only person that comes back with a bid, and then this time they're like, you know what, screw you guys, $4,500 a month. Then we're stuck with an IT service for $4,500 a month, because they're the lowest bidder.
I don't disagree with that concern. I think that is, there's some merit to that concern. Although I'm not afraid of that concern coming a reality, because we've built a relationship over several months with First Call, where, I mean, they've been gracious enough to provide the service to us without a contract and to do it on a month-to-month basis because they understand the situation. So it's a valid concern to bring up, and I hope it doesn't become a reality. That's the best I can address that. With that, Ms. Devlin?
I think it's fair. You haven't asked. Okay. Let's do it.
Sounds good. With that, we'll move forward. Re-advertise for 2 weeks and 3 papers. Is there any other places you'd like it advertised before we miss something? Okay.
We don't have a motion on a second.
We're going to take it for face value. All right. The next item does not apply. That is the services agreement between the town of Stevensville and First Call, because you did not award a contract. Item E is a contract award for the 2020 Water System Preliminary Engineering Report to HDR Engineering, who is not affiliated with Mr. Kellogg. Mr. Kellogg is with PCI Engineering. The contract award before you tonight is to essentially start the process so that a contract can be drafted between the town and HDR Engineering. They've sent you the proposal for what they are willing to do in the preliminary engineering report. And so with that, if you do the contract award tonight, we will bring a contract back to you for approval with a dollar amount affixed to it so that we know what to budget for on the water project. This preliminary engineering report will help guide us through what the future needs are of the water system, including growth of the community, future wells, and most importantly, water storage, which is something that the town has been putting cash away for a considerable amount of time. Mr. Michelson.
I make a motion that we approve the contract award for the 2020 Water System Preliminary Engineering Report to HDR Engineering.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Michelson, seconded by Mr. Vick, to approve contract award for the 2020 Water System Preliminary Engineering Report to HDR Engineering. Council comments? Mr. Michelson.
Now can we ask for a price? They were the contract?
I don't know the price. The contract hasn't been drafted yet, so we'll bring the contract back with the dollar amount on it.
Okay.
But we've got to award the contract to HDR, and then they'll come back and say, here's what it'll cost.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Any further council comment before I call for public comment? All right, Mr. Gibson.
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, just on that, I'm a little confused again. So you don't know how much it's going to cost. You don't know where the money is coming from. So you're awarding them a contract, correct?
We're awarding a principal, yeah.
So if it came back high, then you could not do it.
Correct, because the contract, if they write an absurd amount of dollar figure into the contract before the council, they don't have to approve it, or they can negotiate.
Just one more question: where is the money coming from? However much it costs.
The water fund.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. The water fund has roughly $1 million. A little over $1 million for this very purpose. That's what it was there for. Mm-hmm. Any further public comment on the PER? Okay, hearing none, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Holcomb?
Aye.
Councilmember Devlin?
Aye.
Councilmember Michelson?
Aye.
Councilmember Vick?
Aye.
Okay, thank you. Next item is discussion decision on Resolution 474, establishing the maximum number of police officers of the Stevensville Police Department. In our perusal through codes and process and an array of other things, we found some hidden language, I suppose, you could say, that indicates that the council needs to set what the roster is of the police department. In your council packet, what we're asking you to do is to set that number to 6 sworn personnel, and with the contingency that that's the available number of positions, and those positions would only be filled given that there's funding availability for them, which is addressed on an annual basis in your budgeting process. So you, in theory, would approve six positions tonight, six FTEs. However, next week you'll hear us come forward for requests as to how many FTEs we're actually going to fill. It also the code also requires that you designate the current police force into two different categories, those of active status and those who are not working but are eligible to be paid should we expand the force. Currently, there's only three sworn personnel on the active roster, and there isn't anybody on the inactive roster. So that's relatively straightforward. Mr. Michelson?
James, do you want to explain the retirement system as far as this many employees? Let's say we do go up to six. Would the town be able to provide the retirement for those six? What is it, 7%?
So the retirement is built into...
Yeah, here.
Speaking of the microphone.
The retirement is built into the... the salaries and wages model, the compensation for the benefit package, that type of thing. PERS presently is our retirement entity. Okay, MPORS is what everybody would like to go to because it's a 20-year system, but that's a discussion for another day. I don't want to go down that road. So yes, I mean, it can accommodate it. And the reason why I'm suggesting six is because we have been, for years, the bottom of the barrel per capita law enforcement versus populace. Absolute bottom. And that's not sustainable anymore. It just isn't. Times are changing. People are coming in. People are coming in from other places that have different ideologies. And we have to do something to not only deal with that projected growth, but deal with all the other issues that we're presently having. It's not asking for a lot. If you look at the manpower survey for the state of Montana, towns our size, our population, have 5 and 6 officers, some 7. Okay? City of Hamilton, which is roughly twice the size of Stevensville, population has 14, something like that. We have 3. And one of those is funded by the school. We have to do something. I mean, and I'm not talking, I'm starting my 22nd year. I can see that light at the end of the tunnel, okay? I'm not talking about, we need to address longevity, yes, but there's gonna need to be somebody to come in to take my place soon too. I mean, we gotta really start planning here. I've been here 16 years, I've got a lot of historical knowledge, and that serves the police department well with a lot of people. I mean, I was dealing with the situation today that they didn't want to talk to anybody else but me because I know the historical knowledge of what has been going on with their family. We need to set something up to where we have people that have longevity, people that can serve this community to the best of their ability, and we haven't done that. And I'm just saying that we've got to do it. It's just not a choice anymore. I'm not asking you to fully fund 6 officers. We're going to have to figure that out. And that's going to take some time. It's impossible to train that many people anyway. I mean, it just doesn't happen. What I'm asking you to do is set the roster to say, yes, we recognize we need to have 6 officers here. Now let's figure out how to fund it. And that's going to take several years. I recognize that. I understand. But at least we're setting that level. This is where, as a council, you're recognizing we need this many officers to best serve this jurisdiction.
It's a goal.
It's a goal.
It's something right. We want, you know, strategically planning, we're trying to achieve. Mr. Michelson?
Yeah, James, just a little off topic, but it's still police. So, in the last budget last year, you wanted a squad car.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Obviously, I read your thing there where because of the COVID and all this other stuff, you wouldn't be able to get it at time to be ordered. So is that still on the menu, or?
Yeah, it's been ordered. It's just because of COVID. They're literally, for what was discussed as far as the police package goes from the vehicle. There aren't any. The factory's shut down. You know, they're trying to get everything restarted again. All of the vehicles of that specific type are on the ground and accounted for presently. So we're looking at December, maybe, before we get something. I mean, I know it was already approved. It's just, it's not possible. COVID really just knocked us into the dark ages with that stuff. So,
so where are we with the SRO officer?
We have an SRO. We have a night shift officer. The SRO is presently...
How's the negotiation, your contracts going with the school on that?
I'm still working on that. I'm still working on that. I got some ideas, and I mean, this isn't, you know, the agenda item that we're talking about.
But I got you.
Okay.
I mean, to some degree, I'd like us to try to stay on topic. I mean, essentially what the agenda item asks you to do, we already have three, so we're asking for three additional ones based on funding availability. That's what we're asking you to do. And we're stating that when you approve this tonight, we're not going out tomorrow and hiring three more people because that would inundate the training program. We already have one in the middle of training. So at best, we're out a ways in getting someone trained unless there's a lateral. But you're going to discuss in your budget workshops over the next 3 or 4 weeks how much funding should be dedicated to the police force for positions. So regardless, the statutory requirement still exists that we do need to set the roster. So at the very least, we want to do that. I guess the question before you is do you want that to state 3 officers, 4 officers, 5 officers, or 6 officers? In the last budget, you approved a 4th FTE sworn officer. But because of staff turnover, that 4th FTE was never hired. So I guess even though I say we're asking for 3 more in addition to that roster, there's a vacancy on that roster that's not been filled. And so six people is just 2 more officers compared to what we have funding for now. Ms. Holcomb, go ahead.
I've done research way back when I first got on here, and we are short per capita. This town should have at least have 5 or 6 police officers. I mean, I understand the funding isn't there. We've always talked about the funding's not there. I mean, as long as we're not going out and hiring 2 more police officers without the funding there, I don't see a problem with this resolution as long as we're going step by step and making sure that there's money in the budget to do it.
And the resolution does state, based on funding availability, and it's our intent to have those FTEs approved through the budgeting process. Similar, same process we did last year when you approved the additional FTE.
And the biggest thing, I guess, Robin, to address this is it's showing the intent of the council to say, yes, we recognize there's a shortage. I mean, it needs to get addressed. And when that funding's available, we will strive to address that. That's what it is.
Mr. Vick.
I make a motion to approve Resolution 474 as written.
I'll second.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Vick, seconded by Ms. Devlin, to approve Resolution 474, which establishes the maximum number of police officers for the Stevensville Police Department. Any further council discussion? Any public comment? Mr. Gibson.
Mr. Mayor, members of council, this probably is an issue. I just don't know why you're doing it now, a month and a half before the budget is due, because there's also things involved. You're probably going to need more cars, correct? You could hire more police officers. This is a big budget issue, and I just don't understand why it's happening second week in June when your budget is due June 30th, number one. Just a comment, and as far as the car, the last car was approved in December, the budget. I don't think the COVID thing started until March. I just We approved your car, and I just don't know why it wasn't purchased. I don't think it's COVID.
I could speak to that, but...
That's okay. You don't have to. I just think that, again, it's not a question the chief's needs, but I just don't know why you're doing it now, not while you're in the process. Because it does. It involves retirement, FDDs, lease cars, all kinds of equipment, on and on and on. It just seems like you could wait a month and a half.
Okay. Further public comment. Ms. Rodebaugh.
I'm wondering if there's six police officers, does that change the retirement years? At 22, then could you retire before, isn't it 30 years now? So would that enable you to retire now?
No.
I mean, for six police officers to be paid retirement eventually, it gets expensive.
Yes.
And I have no problem with having six police officers actually working in the town of Stevensville where we're not hiring or calling for the sheriff's department. I'm just wondering about your bottom line. Is it like, I can retire, yay? Or is it, I want six officers so I can retire? I'm just wondering about that.
Okay, so...
The number of officers on our roster has no effect on the number of years someone has to serve.
Yeah, and
I was told differently, so I apologize if...
No, it doesn't.
Am I wrong?
PERS is autonomous. I mean, and the compensation package for benefits for all employees includes that PERS piece. So, yes, it does cost, but, I mean...
But you could retire, then?
It has nothing to do with me. When I'm ready to retire, it doesn't matter if it's just me here. I'll retire. You know, that has nothing to do with it. So it's not really a benefit to me. It's a benefit to the town to get somebody in here that, and I'll speak to that on the next agenda item, that we can start, you know, working towards replacing, essentially. However long that takes.
Mr. Gibson.
Mr. Mayor, this brings up one question on that. But there are city police departments that have 25 years retired, correct?
20.
20.
Yeah,
so what is that based upon, you know?
It's a different system. It's MPORS, Montana Police Officer Retirement System.
So could you do that here?
Yes, but it costs more.
Okay, all right.
And that's been the issue of contention over the years.
I think budget before last year, it was discussed at length at the council and decided that it was not financially feasible for the town to transition to MPORS out of the PERS system. So MPORS is a separate system from the rest of the public employees, but we, for all of our full-time employees, we pay into PERS for all of our employees because they're all PERS members, and so the police officers are part of that system, which is a 30-year retirement. Okay. Any further public comment? Okay. Let's call for the vote. Councilmember Holcomb?
Aye.
Councilmember Devlin?
Aye.
Councilmember Vic?
Aye.
And Councilmember Michelson?
No.
Okay, motion passes 3-1. Thank you. Chief, I know you wanted to, we wanted to kind of at least get this conversation started. I don't think it's reasonable to expect that the town council is willing to adopt Resolution 475 as it's written today. Is that a fair assumption? And that was not necessarily our intent. Mm-hmm. We more or less wanted to get that conversation started because of the time, and I set a personal goal of getting out of here by 9 o'clock because we've been here since 5. We're going to skim over this. It's homework, I suppose, and we will be addressing salaries and wages during the preliminary budget presentation in a larger scheme anyway. So please take a moment to review the salaries and wages compensation for the police department personnel. We'd appreciate your feedback prior to Tuesday's budget meeting so that we can incorporate that feedback and address those concerns then ahead of time rather than being blindsided and give the chief a chance to prepare. So if you see some fine-tuning or some criticism that you'd like to share, please let the chief and I both know that, and we can incorporate that into the conversation we have on Tuesday.
And if any of you have questions about this, I mean, I...
created the entire thing. So call me whenever, you know, we can discuss it. And I can explain that. What's that?
I'll come to you.
Okay. And I'm more than happy to entertain conversations.
Our intent when we brought this forward was at least start the conversation, because it's been said by multiple councils that we need to do something better in improving the pay of our police officers. And this is a way to start that conversation. By no means when we put this agenda item together and put it before council was it intended to be an all or nothing proposal. We understand that there may be some modification, but we need at least a starting point. So with that, we'll move on. Okay, the next item and final business item for tonight's meeting is discussion decision on Resolution 476, approving appointed and elected officials, contract public officer, and contract public officers into the employee benefits program. To be absolutely clear, this resolution ratifies the practice that's been in place at least since I've been part of this organization. Since we switched on to the MMIA benefits package for employees, we've always allowed elected officials and contract personnel and et cetera to participate at their own expense. And this doesn't change that. This doesn't give a benefit or change the expense that they're going to have to pay. If you're an elected official or a contract employee, anybody other than a regular employee of the town, you're expected to pay for the insurance that you sign on for, which we happen to be in the open enrollment period for. So if any elected officials or contract folks want to enroll in the town's insurance policy at their own expense, now is the time to do that. You have till June 15th. So with that, Resolution 476 is a requirement of MMIA. They went back and did a quick review of the files that they had up on our system, and for some reason they didn't have this resolution. We couldn't find it had ever been done on our end. We don't know if it was done by motion rather than resolution, but we wanted something on the books that solidifies the decision and direction of the council. So 476 is before you tonight. Mr. Michelson.
Could you explain to me, Brandon, what a contracted municipal government employee is?
Contract public officer?
Yes.
The judge would be a good example. The judge would be a good example of that, where we don't pay her an employee salary, we pay her on a contracted basis, but she's still an official of the town. So she, under this, and currently today, she would be eligible for benefits from the town, for at her own expense, for the medical and vision and dental insurance and any other insurance that we offer. Okay. Any other questions from council? Ms. Holcomb.
I move that we approve resolution number 476.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved by Ms. Holcomb, seconded by Mr. Bick, to approve resolution 476, which approves appointed and elected officials and contract public officers under the employee benefits program. Ms. Holcomb?
I just want to, you are correct. When before it, council was able to, if they wanted to get on the insurance, they were allowed to get on the insurance. I never knew that it had disappeared. But at one time we were allowed to as council.
And we maintained the process, but when we went for our ED employee benefits renewal this year and signed the documents and sent them over to MMIA, they sent back an email and said, we're missing this. Can you please do it? So that's why we're here tonight. Further council discussion on adopting Resolution 476. Public comment? Nothing. Okay. With that, I'll call for the vote. Councilmember Michelson.
Aye.
Councilmember Vick.
Aye.
Councilmember Devlin.
Aye.
Councilmember Holcomb.
Aye.
Okay, in keeping with our goal, we may even exceed my expectations. I don't have a formal executive report for you tonight in anticipation of next week's town council meeting. From tonight's experience, we have some fine-tuning to do on our online resources. For whatever reason, the live stream was tested all day and worked just fine, and then we filled the room full of people, and it didn't work. So we apologize for that. We'll continue to work through that. As you know, this afternoon we sent an email out letting you know that our updating the budget workshop schedule for budget workshops throughout the month. Those workshops were scheduled at 6:30. We've rescheduled those for 7 o'clock for consistency in the use of this space. And then we have a council meeting next Thursday. You'll notice that today was supposed to be the deadline for getting next week's agenda out. We're going to put that agenda out as soon as we can tomorrow based on this meeting, because there is at least one item that will be carried over into the next meeting. And that's why we didn't publish it at 5 o'clock today. We'll get that out as absolutely soon as possible tomorrow morning for you folks, so you have ample time to review it before next Thursday's meeting. So that's the rationale there. With that, I'll elaborate more on town operations next week. But of course, as always, if you have questions or concerns or need clarification on a point, you have my contact information. So I appreciate your patience as we get through tonight's meeting. I realize it was long, and that's why we started early. I appreciate the public's cooperation and patience as we adjust to different times. I realize it's an emotional thing we're going through, and there's some technical pieces, but nonetheless, I think all in all, we did okay. So I appreciate your time. With that, I'll open the floor for town council comments. Ms. Holcomb.
And I'll try to make it quick. We're hearing about a lot of division in this town and a lot of hatred in this town, and I have to agree. But when I see my name out on Facebook with a bunch of lies, it really bothers me. Councilman, I never said that you hacked my emails. I was asking, how did you get my email? Because there is protocol. I never said that you hacked into it. I'm not sure what I lied about at the one meeting with David Larson. I said that I never replied back to Councilmember Michelson's emails, which I have proof of all of them. I never did. Yes, he sent me some, but I never responded back. No, I never had backdoor dealings with Dave Larson. I never met, I talked to him on emails. That's about it. Most of the time I was telling him to redirect to the council or to the mayor. I even emailed the mayor to say, have you even been in contact with him? Sometimes the words were no. Yes, there's a lot of hate, but it's on both sides now. And I'm tired of hearing it's all one-sided, it's all one-sided, it's all one-sided, because it's not. And for us to move forward, this needs to stop. I'm not sure on what you all were writing that letter about when you said several council members, because I never come into the town hall. I don't call the town hall. I don't email the town hall. So that's a little bothersome to me, and I'm sorry that you all feel that you're being treated this way. But there are, like Ray Smith said, there are protocols to do this. But I wanted to put it out there that if you're going to say something about someone, please have proof that what you're saying is true, because it's not very nice. I don't even go out to that page anymore because my blood pressure shot to stroke level. So, I just wanted to put out there that really bothers me that people will put out lies like that. I'm just glad that there's people out there that know me personally that knows I'm not that person. So, with that said, I'm done.
Mr. Michelson.
I'd like to read a letter here from his Mr. Pat Connell. He carried a bill, he's a senator, carried a bill in 2017 that had to do with quorums. Steve, I find the recent brouhaha raised in Steve-I over quorums underscores a lack of knowledge of Montana laws. I was sole sponsor of the successful SB2 bill in 2017 session. My bill is the most recent handling of this local government issue. First, make no doubt, the ex parte exclusion remains for all layers of government, up to state, local, governments. Ex parte discussions are defined that no decision can be discussed or made away from the appropriate public committee or commission meetings. Second, if you review both MCA chapters
2 and 7, it should readily clear that the head counting to determine if a quorum is present may only occur at the time of a formal meeting of a commission or a committee once the designated presiding officer convenes a meeting, which itself must be in compliance with proper public announcements. Note that in any other situation, Facebook chats, meets over a gas pump, or jointly watching family members at a high school athletic event do not constitute a formal meeting where the issue of the presence of a quorum is relevant. Finally, to cap the issue, I understand that the Stevite Council consists of four members. The Montana Code in Chapter 2 is abundantly clear. There are two ways to reach a quorum. Three members of the council, that includes a council president convening the meeting, or two members plus the mayor, who convenes a meeting. Remember, in either case, the meeting must be have been earlier publicly announced to be a valid quorum. The issue that the city attorney is not up to speed, and this really is quite amazing to me. Feel free to contact to me regarding this. Former state Montana Senator Pat O'Connell Hamilton. I'd also like to add that all the hoopla on Facebook about three members that were having a discussion and a quorum meeting, that was over the 59870 grant, and that's not town related. There was no decisions made. In fact, I wasn't even on council then, and I asked Council Member Vic if the 5970 grant was part of the town, or the thing that was awarded was part of the grant, and Mr. Vic says yes. So I think the thing of a quorum is very overblown. I was kind of put off by it, and I hope that this resolves the issue. Thank you.
To clarify, because I think it needs to be clarified, so to dispel any issues, the grant that was received from the Department of Commerce was the $10,000 grant that the town approved. The money is coming to the town for the Main Street project. If you remember the three individuals who wrote that application on the town's behalf and came to the town council meeting and said, we'd like to submit this application to Commerce, that's the $10,000. Project 59870 had nothing to do with that money whatsoever. They are not getting a $10,000 grant from Commerce in that regard. So just to make that point very clear, it is in fact the town's grant. Are there any further council comments? Ms. Devlin.
I want to address just two things really quick before I go any further. I want to make very clear, it continues to be said that I have gotten personal direction from our attorney. That has not happened. When it keeps being quoted that that Mr. Owens told me to not comment on the resolution between Mr. Vick and I, that is not what happened. That is not what I said. I talked to Michael from the Bitterroot Star, and I said, I choose not to comment. I'm going to refer you to Mr. Owens. That is what I said. So I'd like to clear that up. I did not say that I was told by Mr. Owens to decline comment. Furthermore, I didn't hack the town of Stevensville's emails. I didn't do that. I didn't have anybody hack the town of Stevensville's emails. It's not what happened. So, any remarks about that, I would like to have those stopped. That's not what happened. Those are allegations. That's not true. Moving forward, there is a huge division, and we felt it today in this room. There's a lot of hostility. There's a lot of hate. At the end of the day, we're all people. These people right here, human beings. Us right here, we're human beings. We have opinions, we have thoughts, and most importantly, we have feelings. Remember that. We have feelings. We are not here to be attacked. We're not here to be abused. We're not here to be harassed. Your opinion's welcome. Your attack is not. There's a big difference. You can get your opinion, you can get your thoughts, you can get your feelings out. Without harassment, without attack. Right now, we're in the middle of a pandemic. There's riots going on everywhere. This is a time for our community to come together, to be kind, to be courteous, to find some common ground, not to tear each other apart. It's not how we get forward. That's not how we move forward. I've lived here for quite a while. It's not why I moved here. Town of Stevensville is an amazing place, so let's act like it. Last comment, our streets aren't raceways. There's a lot of people out. We've had a lot of comments, a lot of complaints about not abiding by speed limits. Did you hear that? So we need 6 police officers. But let's slow down. A lot of people are out right now because they have nowhere else to go. Families are out. Kids are out. Let's be careful. Please, let's be careful. Abide the speed limits and maybe even go a little slower.
Mr. Vick?
I guess I'll add some things. First off, it's a shame the things that are going on right now in our country and state and whatnot. I know I've heard a couple of people kind of chuckling and whatnot at the fact that I'm wearing an awesome handmade Star Wars mask. That's because I was for 23 days located in the largest hotspot in the United States right now for COVID. Granted, I am way past my quarantine period, but if there's that off chance that I do have it, I don't want to spread it to anybody. The thing is right now where we sit at, I mean, you know, you look at Mr. Marble's patch. Stevensville is where Montana began. Right now, where we're sitting at, we've only got two choices. We can either keep moving forward and try to work as one body, or we can just, you know, give up and make a motion to unincorporate the town. And I don't think there's a single person in this room right here that would want to do that. It's an absolute shame. And it's ridiculous to see this hate coming from every single person. And it's just one of those things that kind of reminds me of a comic sketch that I like where the first words are, everybody seems to be angry at everything all the time. And it's, I mean, and that's just exactly what it's like right now. And it's, you know, the thing is First Law of Alchemy says that in order to gain something, you have to give something equal. And that's something that we all need to be working on. We need to start giving something equal if we want something equal to come back. Thank you.
All right, with that, it concludes town council comments. There are no board reports because the boards have not met. However, those fire up this week as we move into phase 2 of the reopening plan from the governor. So the airport board is scheduled to meet next week. All public meetings will continue to be held in this facility as we're able, just because it's twice the square footage of City Hall and accommodates us better. So with that, we'll adjourn and we'll reconvene on Tuesday at our budget workshop. Thanks, everyone.
At 7.
At 7 o'clock.